Would like to call this meeting to order. Would ask everybody to please be seated. Yeah, you can sit there. How are you doing, Harry? Like to welcome everybody out to this RAC meeting. I'm Mike Worthen. I've been asked to chair this meeting since Dave Black and Claire are missing in action. They called the weakest member to take care of this. So with that, we will introduce the members of the RAC, starting with Brian on the end.
Brian Johnson, Enoch, Utah, represent the non-consumptives.
Rusty Aiken, Cedar City, Agriculture.
Mike Staley, Deseret.
Lane Torgerson, Ridgefield, Sportsman's Representative.
My name is Kevin Bunnell. I'm the Regional Supervisor for the Division of Wildlife.
Harry Barber, represent BLM. I'm from Kanab. I'm the Kanab Field Office Manager.
Mac Morrell, Bicknell Agriculture.
Dale Bagley from Marysville. I represent an elected official.
Sam Carpenter from Kanab. I represent sportsmen.
Sean Kelly from Fillmore. Represent the U.S. Forest Service.
Okay. Thank you, members of the board and the public, for being here, and the DWR staff. We'd like to just kind of briefly go over some of the procedures that we'll be following. We will have issues that come forward. There are cards that the members of the public can fill out and submit forward based on issues that interest you. We will call out those cards. And also, we would ask you to limit your time to 3 minutes so we don't get here till 9, 10 o'clock tonight. Hopefully, we won't be that long in this meeting. First off, we'd like to have a report from Kevin Bunnell with the Division of Wildlife on the Wildlife Board meeting, and ask him to also give the regional update.
Thanks, Mike. It's been a while since we've been here, but if you'll remember, on March 10th was the last RAC meeting, and the subsequent board meeting was the first week in January, but it was one that was fairly quick. There was a license agent rule amendment, an AIS rule amendment, some amendments to the landowner permit rule, and a cougar rule amendment, all of which passed this RAC unanimously, and were there was a little controversy over the cougar rule amendment at the Wildlife Board, but in general, it was one of the smoother meetings. So really not a lot of update there. As far as the regional update, first thing I wanted to mention is many of you are aware that there were two men that were killed in a helicopter accident over the weekend, one of them being from here in Beaver. Robin Venuti and Albert Rubio, I didn't know either of the gentlemen, but I know a bunch of you probably did, and I just want to pass on condolences to their families and friends for the loss of those two men. Secondly, I just wanted to mention that it'll be relevant to what we talk about tonight. We're keeping a close eye on the water situation. You know, it's particularly relevant in the Southwest Desert, where there's some other things going on right now that you're all aware of that are have some controversy to them. But just wanted to let you know that's something that's on our radar screen. It has been for several months, and we will watch that closely. And if we need to amend what happens here tonight to address that, we will. Then just quickly from our administrative services section, a couple of notes. The draw results will be posted May 30th. Most of you are aware of that, but if not, that's the date. The Antlers application and guidebook will be available online either late May or early June, and the application period will also open in early June. From our aquatic section, they've been working with a couple of advisory groups to put together new fish management plans for the Boulder Mountain and Fish Lake. Those are both going really well, and the results of those efforts will come through this body sometime in the next few months. And then the aquatics folks have started their gill netting surveys for the year, and things look very promising from a fish standpoint. Richard asked me to mention Newcastle, Minersville, Panguitch Lake, and Otter Creek. They're expecting to be really good fishing this spring, so please take advantage of that. And you know, they update when they go out and survey these lakes. Usually the day after they're there, they'll put an update of that information out on the division's Facebook page. So if you ever, you know, want updated information on the bodies of water here in the southern region, that's a good place to get it. And then, you know, again, in relation to the water conditions, there is a possibility of some emergency regulations coming later this year if conditions get to where we're going to, any of the reservoirs get down to where they're going to be drained, we will liberalize the possession limits and things so that people can take advantage of removing as many of those fish as possible before reservoirs are drained. So be paying attention to that. From our wildlife section, you know, the story of the winter has really been transplants. We've been moving animals all around, and our biologists worked very hard, put a lot of long hours to accomplish that, and I want to thank them for their efforts there. And just a quick note from our habitat section, some of you will remember that last fall, as the deer leaving the Paunsagant, encountered some new fences there along Highway 89 that they had fenced that and put some underpasses in, and those animals were piling up on the fence, and we were concerned what that was going to mean. You know, the story looks much better on the way back. The deer are moving back from the Arizona Strip, and they're not piling up on the other side. They seem to be finding those crossing structures and moving through much better than they did on the way down. So I hope that repeats itself this fall when they migrate south again. And unless there's any questions, that's all I have for regional update.
Any questions from the RAC?
Is Paiute on your list again to be killed this fall, or just dependent on water conditions, I guess?
So what Dale's asking about is Paiute Reservoir is infested with chubs right now. We've been looking for an opportunity to treat that, but we need low water levels to be able to do so. Otherwise, it's hard to get a complete kill. But yes, if we get the conditions to do that this year, we'll certainly do it. We're planning on it and hopeful that we'll be able to get it done.
Kevin, you said the Paunsagant piled up going south last year. Did we lose any on that, or did they eventually find their way?
I'm not aware of any. Well, let me put it this way: we lost much fewer than we have in the past, because usually there's a number that are killed there on the highway. So although those deer, you know, encountered something new and took a little time to figure out how to get through there, I think in general we probably saved a whole bunch of deer compared to what it had been in the past. And you know, maybe Sam or some of those that are familiar with it can comment on that as well.
Yeah, I know that we had seven of them get hit that either jumped the double cattle guard or found their way through the fence. We had a pretty severe flood in there right after that fence was done. It washed a few places out. They were scrambling out there doing repairs and getting all that stuff fixed. Some did get through. About 100 head of deer wintered on the other side, just on the other side of that fence, and stayed there the whole winter, which has never happened before. So it did change the dynamics a little bit on what was going on. But I think in time it's going to be a good one, a good project and successful.
Great. Thanks, Sam.
Any other questions? Okay, looks like I jumped over one item, review of an acceptance of the RAC minutes and agenda items. Do we have a motion to accept those?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion we accept the RAC agenda and the minutes from the last meeting.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the meeting. All in favor, raise your hand. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay, let's jump right into item number 5, R657-45, wildlife licenses, permits, and COR forms, rule amendment, and Kevin Bunn will give that.
And Mr. Chairman, with your approval, let's go ahead and do 5, 6, and 7 together. They're all very short. And Lynn, if I could have you advance the slides for me, and I'll just cover that from... Yep. Yes. Thank you. So Kenny Johnson, our administrative services chief, asked me to cover for him tonight. I think these will be fairly non-controversial. They're really just kind of some housekeeping things and a couple of our rules. Go ahead, Lynn, to the next slide. So just some background information. Remember last summer, the RACs and the Wildlife Board passed a fee increase to set the foundation for some of the things we're going to do tonight. That fee increase was subsequently approved by the governor's office, and then the license structure was approved by the legislature this past session. And then the things that we talk about here tonight will become effective July 1st. So these are real positive things that I think you'll like. First, Kenny wanted to make sure that we understood that we listened to the feedback that we got. Many people wanted a multiple year hunting and fishing license and combination licenses, and what we're doing tonight will allow that. So what happened is in this last legislative session, they removed the 365 day language from this rule, which is what limited us to just a 1 year license in the past. And the statute now grants authority to the Wildlife Board to set license terms. So we may have a 2 year, a 3 year, out to potentially a 5 year licenses available, I think is what the fee structure included. So there'll still be 1 year licenses available, but we are proposing allowing multiple year licenses. Again, for fishing, hunting, and combination licenses. And again, in those terms, in a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 year increments. And there's a discount with every additional year. So a 2 year license is a little bit cheaper than a 1 year and 3 year in terms of how much you're paying per year. Another big change that will be helpful is this will allow us to have license renewals begin on the day that somebody's old license ended. So if somebody came in 2 weeks before their combination license expired, they would lose those 2 weeks. But now the system will be programmed that if you have 2 weeks left on your current license and you come in and buy a new license, your new license will begin the day your old license expires. So nobody loses any time on the licenses that they've purchased. And then we'll also are hoping to offer 3 and 7 day fishing licenses and then a 3 day non-resident hunting license for upland game. And that's all there is to it. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any comments from the public?
keep going further. There's two other, there's another
presentation.
Okay. So that was the first thing on the agenda there. That was the license permits and CORs. The next one is our hunter mentoring program, which is a rule amendment. And this is just kind of a housekeeping change. The current rule says that applicants to participate must be made 10 business days prior to sharing a permit. We weren't quite sure what to expect on this and how big of how many requests we were going to get, so we wanted to make sure that our folks had time to process them. Now that we've seen how that's working, we're proposing that we remove the 10-day processing time so that we have more flexibility for participants. But the application and approval must still happen prior to actual sharing of the permit. So that's item number six. And if there aren't any questions there, let's go on just to seven real quick, which is what this is doing is removing the two-pole permit. The new license change that was proposed and passed by the legislature with a combination license or a fishing license, it automatically is valid for two poles for each individual. So we're removing the second pole permit that's been required in the past. So this is just some housekeeping within that rule. And that's all three of them.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Is there any discussion on any of these issues from the public? Okay, do we have any questions or comments from the RAC? Sam?
Yeah, on your mentor program, do you have to go to the regional office to apply for that? Can you do that online? How do they go about doing that?
I think it can be done. You know what, Sam, I'll have to let me send a quick note and get a response for you before we're done tonight, because honestly, I'm not sure right now.
Okay, and
Gianni, do you know? I believe that's what it is, but
yeah,
I'll double check.
We can't set something up through the internet or anything.
We may be able to in the future. It's kind of a new thing that we're just trying to figure out how much demand and everything.
Okay, and on the other rules we were talking about, I had three different people approach me this year on having either a son or a daughter in the military or serving on a mission that would like to apply for a point. Either bonus or the it's a bonus and a, what's the other point?
Preference.
Yeah, preference point. And have the requirement to buy a license in there for these people that are out of the country, won't even be here for a couple of years. If there's any possibility that we can get this where there's an exemption for those people to where they can pay for the point, you know, to apply for it without purchasing a permit. You know, money's tight for a lot of these people, and I just think it would be the right thing to do if they're serving their country or the church to give them an exemption, allow them to purchase a point where they're not going to be in country.
Yeah, Sam, I've heard that as well, and it's just a relic of the way the rule is currently written. But probably I would imagine something the board could deal with if they chose to. So, you know, if you wanted to include that as a recommendation to the board to consider that, I think that would be appropriate.
I would like to have that as a recommendation, to have an exemption for people that are serving the church or the country. I don't know how you'd have to go about to prove it. I'm sure it wouldn't be very complicated to do that. You want me to do that in the form of a motion?
Do we have a motion? or before we do that, let's see if there's any more discussion on these three issues. Okay.
Kevin, I just have one question. Do we know what the cost, has the cost been set for these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-year licenses at this time?
It has, and that actually came to the RAC in November of last year. And I'm going to try to remember off the top of my head. I think it was an $8 increase on fishing licenses and a $6 increase on combination licenses, if I'm correct. It's close to that. But then with the multi-year licenses, like if a one-year license was 36, then a two-year, instead of being 72, was like 70 or 68 or something like that, and it went down in increments like that with the as you went multiple years out.
Seems like a five-year license,
something
like that.
Something like that.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Have they got a trigger if you do a five-year license that they're going to remind you? Because it's like a driver's license. You know, you kind of forget about having to buy one every year.
You know, that's a good question, Russ. Yeah, and I don't know, but it's a good suggestion.
Any other questions or comments from the RAC?
How much is a hunting license now to apply? Yeah, a combination license.
Yeah, currently it's 30. I believe with this license structure it goes to 36.
36.
Somebody double check me on that.
Okay, any other questions? Any comments or questions from the public? Please come forward and state your name and who you're with.
Seth, bring that up here.
Todd Abelhausen, SFW, St. George. I have another comment later on the deer numbers, but specifically to the mentoring program, we've received a lot of phone calls from families that are having a hard time putting their entire family as far as the youth in for the limited entry draws or it's mainly limited entry. They have to buy a tag for, or they have to buy a license in order to put in for any of the limited entries. So what we would propose or request that maybe we look at somewhere down the line is exempting youth, because we're trying to encourage hunter recruitment and we're losing so many of our youth up to, you know, 18 years of age. They've got so many things that they're doing. If they're not going to get into hunting by then, we're going to lose them. And so I would suggest that we put together some sort of a proposal, or at least something to look at in the near future, where they exempt youth for putting in for the limited entry draws, and that obviously they'd have to buy a license if they drew a tag. There are several states that you don't even have to buy a license unless you draw a tag, but obviously Utah requires that, but for hunter recruitment, I think we need to look at that very closely.
And Todd, I just comment on that. That could certainly be done, but it would probably come at a price on the other end, because, you know, we just passed a license fee increase because we, you know, not just on a whim, but because we needed the money to operate. And so that would be a fiscal hit, and we'd have to make up for that some way. And there'd have to be some give and take to do something like that. And that would be the, you know, there's always trade-offs with all the decisions that we make. So
yeah, it always comes down to dollars. But, you know, my feeling is if we don't get some recruitment increases, we're going to have some serious issues. I mean, just in my home, only two out of my four daughters even like to go out in the hills, and that's me pushing them. And so I know that the dads that are having a hard time financially putting in for the deer hunt and things like that. So
yes.
And maybe, you know, maybe we can look at from a sportsman standpoint, putting together a special fund to help out those types of families or things like that. But I really feel like youth recruitment is a key element.
Yeah, and as you know, that's something that's high on our list right now, as well as is recruitment and retention of hunter or sportsmen in general. So
okay, thanks.
Question?
Yes.
You're just talking limited entry, just the limited entry hunts that you want this exception. Or are you talking about?
Well, I believe they have to buy a license to put in for the deer hunt also. So any draw hunt, which would include deer, antelope, elk, limited entry deer.
Okay, but that's a lot different than limited entry, because, you know, there's the whole spectrum of them out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then we have another one from... Okay, for later. Okay.
Then he wanted to comment on other topics as well. So I'll keep track of these for
later on. Okay. Do we have a motion from the RAC on? Let's do the first one first, on R657-45, wildlife licenses. Sam?
Okay, I'll make a motion that we accept
the proposal for R657-45 as presented, with an exception to allow people serving military or on a church mission an exemption from buying a permit when applying for a point.
Do we have a second? Okay, seconded. Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Brian?
Yeah, I hate to be the guy up here that says, you know, as we talk about this, we're talking about $36 a year. Generally, the most missions that we're talking about here are LDS missions, are either going to be 18 months or 24 months. If you plan that right, you can buy one license for 2 years, so we're talking about $38. We're also talking about the loss on the other end, because there's federal reimbursement of about 70, I don't know what the percentage is, I think it's about 70% of that, somebody can clear that up, but we get matching dollars on the federal side, so that's the reason why the division said, hey, let's make everybody buy a license if they're going to apply for a point, because it generates revenue on both ends. And so I just hate to see us open up this box and give an exception to this group or this group or this group when it's $38. So that's just, I mean, I'm open to discussion.
That's to include military, too. This isn't a church thing. This is...
I agree. And most military tours of duty are 1 year or less.
Well, they get stationed after they join. Some of them are 6-year commitments, 4-year commitments, 2-year commitments.
Absolutely. And that's, and they signed on the dotted line. I get that. And I thank them every time I get the chance. I'm just saying they're wanting to buy a point in our state. I mean, what's the difference between that and a guy who works on the oil rigs? And he's going to miss the hunting season because he works three months on, 3 months off. I just hate to open it up.
Okay, any other discussion?
Big difference between military and oil rig.
I agree 100%. I absolutely agree. I just, you know.
Okay, any other discussion?
Back to the youth getting put in for a point to be...
Hang on just a minute. If you want to address, please come forward and state your name and who you're from.
My name's Mike Clark. I'm just here for my own self and make comments. As far as the... was brought up about the youth and not having to buy a license to apply for a limited entry. Basically, what they were saying is they don't want to hunt unless they can draw the best tags in the state. They don't want to put anything into the kitty unless they draw a limited entry. And then, yeah, I'll go then, but other than that, I don't want to hunt a general hunt, or I don't want a pheasant hunt, or I don't want to do anything else. And I don't think that's right either. If we're going, you know, looking at everybody else has to purchase a license to apply. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion from the RAC? Do we have a motion on the floor? Oh. No.
Since you, Gene Boardman, Hinckley, Utah, since you're taking both comments and questions here at this time about youth. First off, whose youth are we talking about, yours or Tom Smith's? Old Tom quit hunting years ago when he forgot or didn't understand that he had to put in for his permit 9 months early. And then the next year he found that he probably wasn't going to draw anyway, so he didn't put in that year, and he hasn't put in since. He sold his gun. And his kids then didn't get introduced into the hunting tradition. And what we have is just a lot of things here in the state that's against the guys like Tom Smith. Putting in for a tag 9 months before the season opens, and then maybe before the number of has even been allocated. I think we could shorten this up a lot. I think we, if we did and made some of these things easier for people like Tom Smith, then you wouldn't have the problem of recruiting young hunters that you think you've got now.
Okay, thank you. I think I jumped out of line a little bit by allowing public to comment. Your comments are at the front, and now we're doing the RAC discussion. So let's jump back in. Do we have a motion on the table?
Yes, there is a motion still. And a second.
No, and a second. Okay. Any discussion further?
Is there any way we can do a motion to accept it as it is and have an addendum to the motion for what you're talking about?
You can amend whatever motion you want.
It's his motion. I'm just wondering if...
Well, anybody can amend a motion.
I would like to make a motion that our recommendation for letting people that are out of the country as a standalone amendment to the motion, not just lumped in with this motion.
Okay. Do we have a second on Brian's motion? Or his amendment to the motion? Having none, motion or the amendment fails. Back to the motion. Any further discussion on the motion? All in favor, say, raise your right hand. Any opposed? Two opposed? Motion passes. Next motion is R657-67, Utah Hunter Mentoring Program Rule Amendment. Okay, do we have any public comment?
Question and comment is that, can I ask a question on this? On this mentoring program, just one bit of clarification. If you have an adult with a license and the kid's set up on the mentoring and the father passes during the hunt, can the kid still go, or is that a license essentially die with the parent?
I don't know that we've dealt with that. And I would guess that would be some discretion there, but I don't know. I don't know that the rule addresses that situation. In fact, I seriously doubt that it does.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other public comment? Okay, any motion from the RAC to accept this or deny it or whatever?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we accept rule number R657-67 as presented by Mr. Bunnell.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept R657-67, Utah Hunting Mentoring Program as presented by the division. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by the right hand. Any opposed? Motion passes. The next motion, R657-13-7, fishing with more than one pole rule amendment. Any public comment? Okay, seeing none, is the RAC ready to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the proposal of the division.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, seconded by Harry Barber. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, raise your right hand. Any opposed? Motion passes.
Mike, before we move on, with Mike being new to this role, let me help you out just a little bit, and let's just, I think there's some new people here to this process, so let me just make sure everybody understands how it goes. So there'll be a presentation from the division, which will be a recommendation. Immediately after that presentation, there'll be an opportunity for questions from the RAC. As soon as we finish questions from the RAC, there'll be an opportunity for questions from the public. Following that, there'll be comments from the public, and there's a difference between questions and comments. A question is just to clarify what has been presented, whereas a comment is to take a position on what's being recommended. And then it will come back to the RAC to discuss the issue and make a motion. If you want to comment on anything, see any one of the guys in a brown shirt here, and you'll need to fill out one of these yellow comment cards so that we can have it for the record, and those will be brought up here, and we'll deal with those one by one as we go through each individual item on the agenda. So, thank you.
Okay, we have a recommendation from, or a proposal of the R657-60 Aquatic Invasive Species Interdiction Rule Amendment. And we have, okay, Justin Shannon?
Matt Bartley.
Oh, Matt Bartley, okay.
So basically this, we're looking to change, give the division the authority to run non-law enforcement checkpoints.
Matt, step up to the mic.
Okay, is that better?
Better.
Okay. So we're looking to be able to have the authority to run non-law enforcement checkpoints along highways. This is a result from the latest legislative session. There was some language added to that gives the division authority to establish these non-law enforcement inspection stations. And this is pretty consistent with some of the following states. Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana also have these checkpoints that they're able to run. Some of our previous checkpoints in the port of entries, checkpoints are a lot more effective because we're able to catch the boats as they're leaving the water body, and especially in regards to Lake Powell, where we don't have control over those boat ramps. This is really beneficial for us to be able to stop those boats from Powell. It's the Park Service that run those check stations, and we don't have much control over that. Basically, all we're trying to do is to stop the mussels from leaving Lake Powell and infested waters and prevent them from getting into the rest of Utah's waters. So with this this rule change, we're looking to hit four main points and to kind of define how these checkpoints are run. The first one is to place these checkpoints where it's a high traffic area. You'll see on the following slide, you know, we really want to target the boats that are leaving Lake Powell and other high priority waters that are high risk for mussel infestation. We number one priority is to have these checkpoints in a safe location, and we want to allow adequate signage so that the boaters can know, you know, that they're supposed to get off and stop and get inspected. We would use this as an opportunity to verify that they have done what they're supposed to do as a responsible boater by starting the decontamination process, which is cleaning and draining their boat, and then they can complete the process by drying it at their home. If there are plans for that boater to go boating before that drive time is complete, then we'll give them a decontamination with the hot water washers that we provide for the boaters. Also, at these checkpoints, we'll be tagging the boats so that there's a record of when they were inspected last, so that we'll know for sure when they pull up to Utah Lake or to other water bodies throughout the state, you know, how long it's been since they were last on an infected water body. So here's some of the checkpoints that we kind of have in the making and we're hoping to implement in 2014 season. There's the two big ones are the ones out of Bullfrog Marina and Wahweap. Like I said, you know, we can't really have much control over the boat ramps themselves, so we want to be able to catch those boaters as they're leaving into the rest of Utah. And with this rule change, we'll be able to run these checkpoints more effectively. And then also Bear Lake is another water body that has potentially some plans in the making to run a few more checkpoints or to start some checkpoints up at Bear Lake. And that's about it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the public?
Are the ports of entry already signed? Are there signs of the ports of entry?
Yep.
And they're...
We're running the port of entry 40 hours a week this season.
Matt, come on.
But the signs are visible already. They're...
Yeah. So the port of entry signs are up, and when we have the port of entry open, those signs will be on.
Well, the reason I ask is because, as you know, there's a conflict going on between Clive and Bundy and some cattle, and they're worried about them getting into the state, going to an auction in Utah. There was a report by some people that the livestock signage at the port of entry down there was covered up. KDXU radio in St. George reported tonight that they checked with the port of entry, and the port of entry says, no, it's the quagga mussel sign that's covered up. So if that's the case, why is it covered up?
It's covered because we haven't started. And I think there was some clarification. He was asking responding to whether we have signs. We do have signs. We haven't started operations at the port of entry yet. As soon as we do, those signs will be covered. But that is the sign that's currently covered, so that people that were coming through during the winter weren't confused that they needed to stop at the port of entry.
Part of the confusion with that was there's a light that blinks that says when this light's on, pull over for watercrafts, and people were getting that confused with the lights behind it for when the port of entry was open. So that's why we had it covered up. We have plans for a better light, so that confusion isn't anymore.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions from the public? Any comments from the public at this time? Seeing none, then we will open questions from the RAC.
Is the Park Service helping in your enforcement at all? Or, I mean, you say that you need these checkpoints because it's hard to get in on their boat ramps. Are they not helping in the enforcement of the quagga mussels, or what's going on there?
They are helping. However, the Park Service tape that they have to go through is a lot more complicated, I would say, and they're a lot more restricted on what they can and can't do. For example, just giving them people a flyer, it's a whole process. They're putting up a new sign is a whole process that is really slow through the Park Service, and we want to be really proactive and make sure that we catch it. But they are working with us, it's a partnership that we're trying to build, but I think these checkpoints would help us address our needs much better.
Okay, any other questions from the RAC? Mac? Going north out of Lake Powell, where's the checkpoint? Is that the head of North Wash there?
So the checkpoint out of Lake Powell, there's going to be one on Highway 89 before you hit Kanab. So
but coming north out of Lake Powell. From Bullfrog. From Bullfrog,
okay.
Yeah.
Yep, so there's two potential spots, one that we've run, on Highway 95, I believe it is, going north out of that. And then there's another one in Hanksville. That's it. I'm still kind of learning the places, and yeah. So the
what about if you don't put it at the head of North Wash, those people going to Colorado go down North Wash and out through Blanding and into Colorado. So I think you ought to put it at the head of North Wash. There's a rest stop right there anyway.
Okay. And I think that's part of the problem is finding an adequate space so that you can
have space right there. All
the signs. All right.
Plenty of space.
Yeah, we can definitely look into that.
Because otherwise you'll miss the Colorado people going.
Yeah. So that's out of...
When you come north out of Bullfrog, I can't remember the highway you hit. Anyway, You get on the main highway right there at the head of North Wash.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look into that and see
what
the feasibility is of that.
Okay. Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the proposal of the division.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept the proposal 657-60, aquatic invasive species interdiction as proposed. Do we have a discussion from the RAC? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, please signify by the hand. Any opposed? Motion carries. Our next item is Bucks and Bulls, and we have Justin Shannon, the big game coordinator, to present this from the division.
I think I'm the first person that this mic hasn't been too short for. So, okay, my name is Justin Shannon. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations for 2014. So to begin, we'll start with mule deer. And I just wanted to give a quick update of kind of where we're at and where we've been in regards to harvest on general season units. This graph depicts the number of bucks killed from 2003 to 2013. And as you can see, we've had some high years where we've harvested close to 28,000 bucks and some low years where we've been closer to 19,000. The last 2 years, we've been above 25,000 bucks at the higher end of this scale, and things have been pretty good with the harvest. Next is our fawn production trends over the last 15 years. As you can see, we've had our peaks and our valleys, especially late 90s, early 2000s. But over the last 5 years or so, we've been pretty stable between 61 and 65 fawns per 100 does. And then our buck to doe ratio over the last 15 years as well. For a long time, we were kind of hovering around 15 bucks per 100 does with a peak in 2007. And the last 2 years, 2012 and 13, were 18 and 19 bucks per 100 does on general season units. So things have been looking up. With that background, I'd like to get into the recommendations for general season permits. We're recommending a slight increase this year statewide from 84,600 permits to 84,800 permits, so a net increase of 200. With that said, though, because we have 30 general season units, six of these units we're actually recommending decreases in permits, seven units we're recommending increases, and 17 no change. There's a lot on this table, and I want to take a minute and go through it real quick. On the far left, you have your general season unit, and then the second column over, you have your objective, what we're managing for, 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, or 15 to 17. And then you have your three-year buck-to-doe ratio average, which is what we manage to. There's also trends, where our buck-to-doe ratio is relative to last year, whether they're increasing or decreasing. And then the permits that the Wildlife Board approved in 2013, and then finally our recommendations for this year in 2014. And those units on the far left that are highlighted in yellow represents a decrease in permits, whereas those that are in green represent an increase. And so what you can see from here is we're recommending a decrease in permits on the Beaver and the North Slope unit, and a slight increase on the Pine Valley. We're also recommending decreases on the Box Elder and the Cache units, and increases on Southwest Desert and Zion, again, based on where we're at relative to the buck-to-doe ratio. And then finally, on this slide, we're recommending decreases on the South Slope Bonanza Vernal and the West Desert West, but we're recommending increases on the Monroe, Ochre Stansberries, Panguitch Lake, and the Wasatch West units. Moving from general season to premium limited entry, I wanted to take a minute and explain how permits are generated for premium limited entry units. So your regular permit that you would get on these units is predicated on an age objective. And so on the Henry Mountains and the Ponsagon, we're managing for 40 to 55% of the bucks that are harvested to be 5 years or older. And as you can see on the Henrys, we're at 72%, so we're well above the parameters of the age objective. And on the Ponsagon, we're at 64% of bucks harvested were 5 years or older. Management buck permits, those are a little different. Those are designated to allow for increases or decreases in buck-to-doe ratios. And so on the Henry Mountains right now, we're at 56 bucks per 100 does, and the sideboards of that is 40 to 50. That's what we should be managing to, so we're a little bit over. And on the Ponsagon, again, managing for 40 to 50 bucks per 100 does, we're at 44 with a declining trend on that unit. So overall, what we're doing with permits, or what we'd like to recommend tonight, is on the Henry Mountains, an increase of 3 permits from 48 to 51, and on the Ponsagon, an increase of 9 permits from 135 to 144. For management permits, the bottom table there, we're recommending an increase of 5 management buck tags on the Henry Mountains from 30 to 35, and on the Ponsagon, a decrease of 8 from 22 to 14. For the rest of the deer units, those that are limited entry, we manage these at, for 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does. And as you can see on the far right, we have three that are below objective, Fillmore Oak Creek, La Salle Dolores Triangle, and the West Desert Vernon. And then South Slope Diamond Mountain is above objective. So what we're recommending with permits overall is unlimited entry units is going from 827 to 811. The bulk of those cuts would be taking place on the West Desert Vernon unit because we're under objective there. The other thing I want to bring to your attention is the book cliffs. Last November, when the during the rack and board process, we voted we were approved to split that unit for the any weapon hunt, and so this is the permit numbers for the north and the south. And the idea there was to get more harvest on the south and give the north a little bit of relief. Some people like to look at this as to how we're doing it with archery, any weapon, or muzzleloader. As you can see from this graph, the decreases are generally taking place on the any weapon units, and overall a decrease in 16 permits for limited entry units. Moving on to elk. The statewide plan calls for spike permits to remain at 15,000 as long as hunter success rate is below 20%, and this last year we were at 17% success rate. Thus, we're recommending maintaining 15,000 general season spike elk permits for this fall. We also recommend no change to the general any bull permit numbers, that of 14,300, or the 300 youth any bull permits, and we want to maintain the 20 late youth any bull permits in the Northeast region. Moving on to limited entry elk. Overall, we're recommending a 3.6% increase in permits, or 100 permits total, going from 2,742 to 2,842. With elk, it's a little different. We don't manage these on like a buck to doe ratio or a bull to cow ratio. These are solely based on age objectives. And so we have some units that we manage for 7.5 to 8 year old bulls. And as you can see in that middle column, in all but one of them, we're under that age objective. And as a result, we're continuing to recommend decreases in permits there on the far right on the Beaver East, the Book Cliffs, Little Creek, Fillmore Pavant, the Monroe, and the San Juan. And this is something that we've been doing for several years now. I think I was looking at the numbers in 2011. I think we've cut over 100 permits since then with the idea of trying to get those average ages to the sideboards of 7.5 to 8 year old 8 year old bulls. So for the 6.5 to 7 year old units, we have some units that were increasing, like the Southwest Desert Indian Peaks, some that were recommending a decrease, Central Mountains Nebo and South Slope Diamond Mountain. But overall, it's a difference of 2 permits recommended from going from 403 to 401. On 5.5 to 6 year old units, this is where the bulk of our units lie and the bulk of our elk populations lie. We're recommending an increase in 99 permits on these units, and those units would be Central Mountains Manti, LaSalle Mountains, North Slope Three Corners, Nine Mile Anthro, Plateau Fish Lake, and Wasatch Mountains, all of which are over their age objective of 5.5 to 6. And then finally, on units that we manage for 4.5 to 5-year-old bulls, I recommend increases on all of these because they're over objective, except for the North Cache, where we're recommending a 17 permit decrease because they're slightly under their age objective. Moving on to limited entry pronghorn permits. Statewide, we recommend a 60 permit decrease, going from 841 to 781. The bulk of these cuts are taking place on the plateau unit, Parker Mountain. and then moving on to the rest of the once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. For moose, we recommend going from 71 to 67 permits, basically because some of the ages on these units are declining. For bison, we recommend going from 104 permits to 84 permits statewide. And one thing I wanted to note with the bison is when the Southeast region met with the Henry Mountains Bison Committee, they wanted to express how many total permits were going to be on the Henry Mountains, and that number is 77. There's 74 in the draw, which is in the tables that you've received, and then 3 conservation permits, so for a total of 77. And that was always confusing because we'd say this is the number, and then we'd get to the RAC and board process, and the public permits would be a little different. So I just want to make note of that. For desert bighorn sheep, recommending an increase of 3 permits statewide from 37 to 40. For Rocky Mountain bighorns, recommending a decrease of 2 permits from 40 to 38. And then with mountain goats, recommending a decrease from 162 to 108 permits for this fall. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the public? Okay, Donnie, would you come forward?
Yeah, my name's Donnie Hunter. I'm representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife Iron County Chapter. We have some of our members concerned about the increase in the permits on the Zion unit, the desert bighorn sheep. Could we get an explanation of why we're having that increase?
This past fall in November, we did a survey of the unit, and the population has increased. RAM permits are based on 12 to 15% of the total RAMs counted on the unit. And we increased from 9 permits to 13 permits this year. That's an increase of 4 permits over last year. 13 permits is the minimum that the management plan will allow.
If we're going to increase those up to that many, we're worried about the quality of hunt there with the numbers. We might want to split that hunt or something so that we're not all out there at the same time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the public?
On these increases and decreases and so forth, I can understand that things have to increase and decrease, but there's a bunch of permits that have already been given out, and a bunch more that's been promised, and apparently they didn't have to worry about the increase and decrease for those special permits that the public has to worry about. I'd like somebody to explain that, please.
Sir, are you referring to the conservation permit program? Okay.
That and all the other extra
okay. program. Okay. Just a quick update on our conservation permit program. What we do is we take a small select number of permits, and they're actually auctioned off. And with that money, 90% of the revenue comes back to projects or activities that, that help habitat or mule deer or elk or whatever these species are. And so you're right. I mean, it is permits that are certainly given, but it's with the intent of raising funds to help wildlife. So,
and Justin, just to add a little bit more, sir, those permits are based on a percentage. So if the public permits decrease and it drops below the percentage, then those permits automatically decrease as well. And so it's around 5%. And so if you drop below where 5% means one less tag, then that's an automatic thing that happens.
But it's decided before the public permits are ever decided.
No, it's not. It's decided in the same process for next year's. There is a one-year lag, but it catches up from after 1 year. So.
Any other questions from the public?
I'm Gib Yardley from Beaver. I run cattle on the Cedar Mountain Pangley's Lake unit and also on the West Desert. And we're facing some awful droughts out there. And we feel that the elk are getting out of hand out on the West Desert as well as on the mountain, and these, especially in these drought years. And we feel that we should have an increased number of cows that we take off and bulls too. There's a lot of big bulls out on that desert. I had 17 one bunch stay in one of my pastures all winter. Now, I can't quite follow this. How many cows are you recommending for taking off the Southwest Desert? Is that the 365? Is that the total amount?
Yeah, that'll be part of my next presentation where I go through all the antlerless stuff. And so, yeah, well, we can talk where we're at populations of elk.
So I'm not supposed to bring up this population deal now, huh?
we'll deal with antlerless tags, the removal of cow elk in the next presentation. So if you can hold your thought until Justin comes and talks about antlerless, he'll present all those numbers and hopefully clarify, make sure everybody's has the same understanding, and then we'll go into questions on that one. Is that okay?
Well, is this on bulls you're talking about now?
Yeah, this is just on bulls, and we increased that by 9 permits, I think, on the Southwest Desert.
And what about Pangley's Lake?
It's remained the same from last year.
We're getting a lot more bulls, especially out on the Southwest Desert. We think that in this drought and things, that them numbers should be increased. We're very sincere about that. We're getting so much darn trouble on those deserts. We like to get along with the sportsmen, and we like to see some elk and things, but we don't want them and the wild horses to run us right out of business, and that's about what's happening right now. We're having a heck of a struggle. And another thing, I want all you sportsmen to really be aware that Fish and Wildlife Service is trying to bring in the Mexican wolves up into this country. They're proposing some of that, and if you want to do away with your elk, let them things will do it. They tell me that before they put them wolves in Yellowstone Park, they had over 19,000, the biggest elk herd in the world. Now they're down to about 6,000, and they're killing a big share of the fawns, so they can't increase. So we need to really all together fight to keep those doggone Mexican wolves out of this area. And we've all got to work together on that thing. But we feel that when these droughts come along, that the cattlemen take the blunt of it, and we try to really take care of our ranges, and we voluntarily keep some cows off. We don't have the feed farm, both on the summer in our country and our winter country. And we feel that in these drought years, you should increase these numbers of these elk that you're taking off. And also, we're getting more, quite a few more pronghorn antelope out there on the West Desert, and I think we ought to increase those numbers a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do we have any more questions from the public?
Just a quick question. Do we have any idea what kind of habitat damage occurs as a ratio between the wild horses and an elk? Say one elk or one horse equals 10 elk, 15 elk, 50 elk, as far as damage to the habitat. We all know the horses are worse. I'm just wondering what the ratio is.
Yeah, probably the best way to look at that would be from an AUM standpoint. And I think an elk, if I remember right, is about 0.75 of an AUM. And I cannot remember what a feral horse is off the top of my head. I can't remember that, but so I can look into it, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay, let's move on. Is there any questions from the RAC?
Yeah, there was quite a significant decrease in the goat tags. Would you explain that?
Yeah, last year we got really aggressive with our goats, and part of it was because we were over on areas like the Willard and the Tushers and things like that. A lot of those mountain goats, we got pretty aggressive with transplants last year as well, with taking animals to the Dutton, the LaSalles, and so those were animals that we didn't have to take through harvest, which is why we can afford to cut permits from 162 to 108 or whatever that number was. So that's a good chunk of that decrease.
Any questions from Ryan?
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, on your premium deer units, the Henrys and the Ponsagant, can you tell me where we come up with the criteria as far as the age objective, how that was set, and also what is the doe to fawn ratio on those units and the buck to doe ratios?
Sure. So some of that's in this. Let me get it back there. Okay. To answer, and if I miss any of these questions, remind me. The first question was, how did we get there? What it was is this was decided upon with the statewide mule deer committee. So as the management plan was passed in 2008, I believe, essentially what you have is a pendulum, if you will, of guys that want to hunt every year and guys that want extreme quality. And so the Ponsagant and the Henry Mountains fell as those categories for extreme quality. And as they were talking about the sideboards that they wanted for quality, they wanted 40 to 50 bucks per 100 does, and 40 to 55% of those bucks that were harvested to be 5 years or older. So that's the background of it, and we've managed it that way for about 6 years. And then as far as fawn to doe ratios on the Henrys, I think we were at 60 this year. And on the Ponsagant, someone's going to have to help me out with that. Fawn to doe ratio on the Ponsagant? 52. So. Was that all of them, Sam?
Yeah, that was it, but can you explain, 52 to 100 is not really a good ratio. Isn't that kind of an indication that we're barely treading water with that population?
It depends on the population, really, because, and part of my next PowerPoint is going to discuss some of this, it's half the solution. What you're producing is only half the equation. The other half of that equation is what is surviving. And so you're right, in some of these areas, 52 would be really poor if you had low survival, if you had a lot of winter kill like you have up north, some of those areas. But so it's dependent on survival, I guess. So.
Okay, Rusty.
So on the same note, the five-year age class, was that a number just kind of picked out of the sky? It's a new program for the division, right?
So there's a lot of research that says that mule deer they get to some maximum ages at about 4 years. But they didn't want to just stop at 4 years. They wanted to kick it an extra year higher and say, okay, we want 40 to 50% of these bucks to be 5 years or older because age and quality are so highly correlated. And so that's, I don't think, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you could say it could have been voted one way or the other to be higher or lower, but they landed on that because four is really top quality, and they just kicked it up a notch from there. So.
Okay. Any other discussion or questions from the RAC? Okay, having none, we will move on to the public comments. Todd Abelhauser.
Abelhauser.
Actually, your missing RAC member kicked me in the butt and told me I had to come up here, so you can thank my comments to Dave Black. We spent a lot of time on the Panguitch unit, Panguitch Lake unit, and I personally don't hunt there. And the reason I don't hunt there is because, similar to my comments, there's a lot of people that are specifically focused on the areas where majority of the public access is. My concern is we had a very major deer kill off there about 4.5 years ago, 4 years ago, I guess it was. And we lost a lot of fawns and we lost a lot of does. I'm sure we lost some bucks too with the cold weather. We're also killing or giving 150 doe tags, and we've transplanted some deer off there the last few years, which is going to reduce your buck to, or going to increase your buck ratio because you're taking does off the mountain. So there's been a lot of factors that have increased our buck to doe ratio on the Panguitch Lake. We also have a population issue. And so to me, if we're not looking at those factors, we've got a real problem on our hands. And to add doe tags and buck tags to a unit that took that significant of a death toll in 2009 and 10, I think they lost somewhere in the 80. It was significant on the fawns, and it was 30 or 40% on the does in several areas. So I would suggest that we look closely at that number. I think it's great that we're managing the deer, and it looks like we're managing hunters a little bit. But I'm glad that we're managing units for deer. Panguitch has a high, I guess, irritability rate, as a lot of units have. I'm sure a lot of people that live in a unit or that spend a lot of time in the unit get a lot of complaints. But Dave, and I know Dave wrote a letter to the RAC, so I'm sure you guys all have that. But I agree with his comments on that letter as well. So I'd like to really look at that winter die-off and the taking of those of the doe tags and the transplants that we've done the last several years.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Next comment is Wade Heaton.
Wade Heaton, representing Friends of the Pontsagon. I want to say right up front before I get cut off because I'm talking too long, really appreciate you guys and all the time you spend and all that you do for wildlife. I want to just give you a little update on the Friends of the Pontsagon. We are still alive and well. We met about a month ago, had a really good group. We've actually got a little more interest from some sportsmen and some people in the area. Really diverse group. Anyway, good meeting. Felt like we came out of there with some good recommendations. The one I want to talk about first is obviously on the Pontsagon buck, trophy buck numbers, where we've got a little bit of a dilemma. Our average age is obviously well out of the management plan. And I want to give you a little bit of history. Justin talked a little bit about it. A little bit of history. When we first started this, remember, we started these two separate triggers. We've got the trigger for the average age for the trophy bucks, and we've got the buck to doe trigger for the management bucks. We started doing that when we started the management hunts about 5 years ago. When we originally came up with that idea, we wanted to have a six-year-old average. We felt like, you know what, that's the kind of buck, that's the age of buck we want, 6 years old. Let's pick a percentage of the bucks killed that we want to be 6 years or older. We had a lot of input from everyone, obviously with the DWR as well, and Anise was pretty adamant that on a free-ranging herd, there is absolutely no way we're ever going to get to even a five-year average, let alone six. Six is stupid. Let's compromise at five, put our percentages out there, and we will never hit it. as Friends of the Ponsonagon Group, that was our goal. We had just got done cutting permit numbers by 60%, if you remember. And so we wanted to have a management plan in place that would make it so that we ride that out. And let's see where those 60%, that cut goes. And so that was why we set the management plan the way we did. There was no biology behind it. There was no science. We literally pulled those numbers out of the sky and said, let's try it. And they said, we'll never get there. And we said, great, that's what we want. Well, 4 short years later, we're staring down way over objective. And it's not their fault. We believed it just as much as they did. That's just the way it turned out. So we have real heartburn with where we're at. The Ponsonagon's come a long ways, but we've still got our issues. You know, our total population is struggling. Our buck-to-doe ratio, as Justin just mentioned, has been declining these last 4 years. We've got our struggles, and even though we've come a long way, we don't think we're to the point where we want to start increasing permits yet. And this made-up management plan is forcing an increase in permits. So what we would like to do is we'd like to hold off for now. We propose that there be no increase in trophy tags for the Ponsonagon for 2014. The statewide Mule Deer Committee is going to meet this summer, and there's already some talks. I think some great ideas have come up with ways to address this for the premium limited entry units. And I think we'll see some good common sense solutions to it. But in the meantime, we don't want to see an increase of 9. We've just got too many issues in front of us, and we feel like we've got a little more progress to make before we start opening up and increasing tags. I think that's about it. We do want to support the management buck decrease in permits. Obviously, we mentioned our buck-to-doe ratio is suffering, and that's the trigger on that. And so we do want to support that reduction to 14. Also, we want to support the increase in bull elk tags. Anytime we have elk tag increase on the Ponsonagon, we all like it. So it's a good thing. Anyway, appreciate all the work that's been done on this. I know there's been a lot of meetings. We've met with the DWR, and they've been great to work with. Anyway, thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you. Next is Josh Jennings.
Yeah, hello. My name's Josh Jennings. I'm representing the Alton CWMU. First off, I just want to say that we do support the proposal from the Friends of the Ponsonagon. We've got two conflicting numbers here that we've talked about already about buck-to-doe ratio is on a steady decline, but our age objective is saying another thing. We don't think it's quite the right time to start increasing trophy tags on the ponds. We do support the decrease in management tags. There's a lot of good things happening on the ponds right now. It's going in the right direction. I'm somebody that lives on the ponds. I hunt it. And I spend 365 days a year on there, and I like what I'm seeing, but it's not time to start jacking those tags up yet. I think with the statewide Mule Deer Committee that's coming up, we need to just kind of work with those guys, get us a plan from there, but it's not time right now to start increasing tags. I thank you for the opportunity to comment. Thanks.
Hey, thank you. Jeremy Chamberlain.
I'd like to thank you guys for all your help in wildlife and the time that you spend away from your family and helping us out. My name is Jeremy Chamberlain. I'm representing the Landowners Association and on the Ponsonagon. One of the things that we need to talk about some of the improvements that are happening on the Ponsonagon that we feel we can handle the number of tags that are in place right now. One of the things the BLM's doing, and in our meetings we include the BLM, but the BLM's got 20 years worth of habitat and projects that are already approved. They've started some of them, and they're making huge increases in bull hogs, chainings, just different projects that will increase the overall population of our deer herd on the ponds. So, you know, we want to keep raising these deer instead of culling them. Also, we've invited the Forest Service to all of our meetings. The biologist in the Forest Service is also on board. We just need to work through some of the environmental impact studies, the NEPA things, and they're willing to work with the Fish and Game, with BLM, in improving water sources, improving some of the clearing some of the forest that is kind of overgrown up on top up by Tropic Reservoir. We've talked to some of the sportsmen's groups about predator control. We all know that's an issue, and so these are some of the things that we feel we have, you know, we're getting our fingers in there, getting our hands involved, and we just don't want to go backwards. We feel I've been working on the Alton CWMU now for 15 years. The last 3 years since the, like Wade mentioned, the tags that have been cut by 60%, the last 3 years, we're seeing a huge increase in the overall quality of bucks. It's phenomenal to see. And so we feel, you know, 9 doesn't seem like a whole bunch, but if you take the top 9 bucks off the ponds, we're looking at 180 bucks again, you know, and we'd really like to see the 9 not involved with the draw this year. We do support the DWR recommendations for the management plan, dropping that from 25 tags to 14 tags. We think that's done a really good job of taking some of the older age class and the non-trophy bucks off the ponds. And I think that's it. So thank you.
Thank you. Let me remind the groups, if you're there's four or five of you in a group, we would like to limit that comments to 5 minutes per group. So you can kind of divide it up among yourselves if you want to. Hey, Jeremy. Randy Johnson.
Do you want me to speak on the desert sheep now, or will that be later? My comments are on desert sheep.
Yeah. That's
now. Thank you. I appreciate the time. Appreciate being here. I have a couple of letters there that I'm passing out.
Would you state your name?
Sure. Randy Johnson, representing myself and some avid sheep hunters around the state.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Mike. The first letter is from a gentleman in Price, Utah. His name is Adam Attridge. Dear RAC member, as a person who devotes a lot of time working with Utah's wildlife resources, I wish to express my concerns regarding an issue that will be covered in the upcoming RAC meeting. My apprehension stems from several factors I have noticed, as well as opinions voiced by fellow outdoor enthusiasts. In the 2014 UDWR permit recommendations, the Desert Bighorn Sheep Zion Unit tag allocation is proposed to increase from 8 to 12 hunting permits this year. In addition to those 12 permits, conservation tag, the Utah Sportsman tag, and the statewide auction tag were also allowed to hunt the Zion Unit. All these permits have been filled within the unit since it opened in 2010. I'm confident that such an increase will reduce the quality of a hunt, with the majority of the tag holders having waited 20-plus years to experience. Aside from harvesting a ram, the attraction of hunting sheep is largely due to the opportunity to experience solitude in Utah's wilderness. Concentrating 15 hunters and their hunting parties into a single area, roughly 5.5% of the core DBS habitat in the state, will essentially spoil the rare essence of sheep hunting. In addition to the hunter density, the core population of the sheep herd and hunting area directly borders the Zion National Park, which attracts on average more than 300,000 outdoor recreators in the month of September alone. Even with the current number of tags allotted, hunter conflicts and competition has become an issue on this unit. Since its creation, the Zion Hunt has been the most prized DBS tag in the state due to the potential to harvest a mature Class 4 ram, which is the desire of all sheep hunters. In studying the harvest data provided by the UDWR, I noticed patterns that suggest...
Randy,
yes.
You got 30 seconds.
Okay.
So if I'd wrap it up.
Very quickly, we need to look at the management plan. It's off. If we increase the tags on this unit, our experience is going to be trash, gentlemen. Simple as that. I've spent 25 years on these units. I screamed about the Escalante unit for 8 straight years and warned people it was going to crash. No one listened. It crashed. And what happens with sheep hunting is you try to maintain this many permits the state does, and then when other units crash, they want to keep the permits up there so they increase them on other units, and then those units ultimately crash. The sad thing about all of this, and this is my final comment, it's not going to matter what I say tonight or some of these other groups or possibly even what the RAC says. In my other job, I've worked with politicians for 25 years, senators and representatives. There are other political entities that ultimately are going to make this decision, and it won't matter what I say or what you say, but it's sad because we're going to lose quality on a great sheep unit.
Thanks. Larry Syrett.
That's Gary Syrett.
Gary.
I represent Garfield Kane County of SFW, and just say we support the Friends of the Pontsagant in no increase on the Pontsagant this year. Another thing that we haven't talked about is the fence that just got put in last year, and we still don't know the impact it's going to have on the herd. We wish that we would wait 1 year before we look at these increases to see the new management plan go into place and see some of the effects these things have. We support the division and the decrease in management tags. Thank you.
Thank you. Gene Boardman.
Gene Boardman, Hinckley, Utah. I have no recommendations on specific numbers or specific units. I do want to push what I've been pushing for a long time, and that's that this age objective bull is no good. Our family messes it up. Like our last bull hunt, my daughter, who is not a highly experienced elk hunter, drew a tag, and we as a family are not, well, we're big on trophy elk. We set a 350 objective, and then at 10 o'clock of the first morning, we set an objective of any antlered bull. And so, as I was telling about her, she finally got into the elk. There were some satellite bulls of Bellerin, and a herd book of bird bull of Bellerin. And what she did is what I would do and what most of the rest of the family would do. Take the first satellite bull that looked good. And so that messes up your age objective, doesn't it? We killed 2 bulls the same year on the Dutton. My son's was a 7-year-old bull, and mine was a 4-year-old bull. The 4-year-old bull was the best bull we've ever killed on the Dutton. And the 7-year-old bull barely broke 300 raw. So let's get away from some of these age objectives. I think it goes the same on the deer. Some of those deer will be really good at 4 years old. Some of them will never be any good as far as your 30-inch trophy deer goes. And so let's find another way to figure this out, and I think it'll make it available for more hunters like myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Tyler Albrecht.
Taylor Albrecht, I'm representing SFW Bryce and Garfield. We support the number, or to keep the numbers the same on the ponds for the trophy deer, and we support to lower the tags on the management hunt. Also, when the mule deer committee meets, we'd like to see velvet bucks included into the management hunt. We believe that they're not doing anything for the herd. For the Henry Mountains, we'd like to keep all the tag numbers the same as what they were in the 2013 season. And that's all. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Got Braden Richmond.
Braden Richmond, representing the state SFW board. Just echoing what's been said, so I'll be quick. We want to support the division with the exception of the Ponsagon and the Henrys. We'd like to leave those permit numbers the same one more year. Coming up on the management plan this year, we'd like to just give that a chance to get into that point without increasing that, leaving that alone for one more year. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Gib Yardley, do you want to talk about antelope in the next, after the next presentation?
Were you mostly concerned with antlerless? Did you want to talk about bucks and bulls too?
I'm concerned with antlerless.
Okay, then that'll be after the next.
Let's wait till the next presentation, then we'll have you up. Okay. Okay. Let me go over the four issues that we have. License amendments, concerns about increase on Panguitch Lake, on deer, concerns about increased permits on the Ponsagon deer, and keep it at the same was a suggestion from the public. Zion Desert sheep tags don't increase, and keep tags on the Henry the same. Okay, was there another one?
Deer. Increased bull elk tags on the southwest.
Okay.
I didn't capture that one, but that's correct.
There was a recommendation. Yeah, don't increase. Okay. Okay, do we have any discussion by the RAC?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, after some of the comments made by the public, I had some questions on the Zion sheep hunt. With your permission, could I ask a couple of questions?
Yes.
I don't know who's the best. Who knows most about the Zion with the DWR? But
Jason.
Dustin or maybe Jason. Hey, Jason, remind me, how long is that hunt on the Zion? Is it the same as the others? It's 60 days, roughly?
It is. It's roughly 60 days.
How close is that population to be at objective? Is that getting up there?
The management plan for the Zion unit is pretty old. It hasn't been revised in over 10 years, and the objective is like 125. We're currently estimating the population to be about 840 sheep.
So are you starting to see a lot of foray behavior by males? Are they starting to leave the unit?
We are seeing rams branching out into places. We have sightings over towards Kanab, over on Smith's Mesa, and other places where we'd rather not have sheep.
So you make sure I understand, you got a fairly dense population right there. You have moving off the unit, and you have worries of contact with domestics?
We do.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. We have another question, Jason.
Just to clarify, within Zion you had that 800 number?
Yes. Yes, within the unit.
What about outside that unit on your counts? Okay, that's
yes,
wrong. So that's the part. So that's the whole Zion unit.
Right.
Okay.
We counted 261 in the park and 243 261 outside the park and 243 outside the park, and use a 60% sightability. So.
Then recently, how many were moved?
This winter we moved 26 sheep total.
Okay, Sam.
And are we going to continue to move sheep and try to branch these out and kind of use the stock to take to other places that are hurting?
Yes, we are currently planning to do a removal in probably November this coming year. We are working with the park. They're working on an environmental assessment to see if we can remove from inside the park. If we aren't able to remove inside the park, we will remove outside the park.
Okay, and I've heard suggestions of splitting the unit into two seasons. Someone suggested that. Are you susceptible to some that kind of action, and would that be feasible?
That's totally a social thing, and you know, it's doable, definitely.
Sam, I would say that would have to happen next year, because we've already set season dates for this year. Okay.
Jason, the suggestions this evening, maybe getting back to what Sam just asked and then looking at the current numbers versus a change that you're recommending, would any of that hinge on what the park is currently doing in terms of their NEPA? Aren't they looking at doing some NEPA now that addresses their numbers and whether or not trapping would be allowed in the park?
They are. That is the NEPA to see if they can approve, you know, removal inside the park.
If that's approved, is there a range or a number of animals that you're looking at or working with them in terms of moving out?
We're looking at moving in the neighborhood of 75 sheep this fall, with at least 50 of those coming from inside the park.
Mike.
Hey, Jason, I have a question also. The concern I'm hearing is overcrowding of hunters, the 12 to 1,500 that might hunt that. Is, in your opinion, is that legitimate, or is there enough area that they can disperse and not be running over each other?
Our hunter satisfaction on that unit is 100% with the 11 hunters that we had there last season. Throughout the life of the hunt, I believe we've been on there for 5 years. It's been 100% satisfaction. I think an increase of 4 permits won't affect that much. We are talking about a 2-month-long season, and certainly not everyone will be out there on opening day.
Hey, Sam?
I'm sorry. Keep doing this. This stuff about the sportsman's tag, the governor tag, and the auction tag, is it true that these tags are all getting the rams off the Zion?
In the past 5 years, the life of, you know, that we've had this hunt, the conservation permit holder and the sportsman permit holder have harvested on the Zion unit.
And do we take that into consideration?
We have.
Any other questions for Jason before we let him sit down?
We'll wait till he sits down.
Okay.
I got a question.
Okay, one more.
So if you take 14 or 15 rams, is that going to affect the population of your mature rams?
It will definitely, you know, reduce that. Just to give you an example, where we surveyed inside and outside the park, I kept that data a little bit different. Inside the park, we had a ram to ewe ratio in the neighborhood of the 60s. Outside of the park, it was 90 rams per 100 ewes outside the park.
What about mature rams, the top end?
60% of those were mature rams.
Okay, any other questions for Jason?
I will just make a comment because we're on this. We did get a call from Adam, from the said he wasn't going to be able to be here tonight, but that the Utah FNAZ, the statewide group, supports the sheep recommendations from the division. So I just wanted to get that on the record for the recording.
One more question for Jason on that. So doing some quick math in my head, so that the
13 permits, is that what we're talking about? Represent about 10% of the mature rams?
12% of the total ram population is 13 permits.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, any further discussion before we move into motions? Okay. Then we will entertain motions. First off, let's take the concern about the increase on Panguitch Lake. Sean, did you have a comment? Okay. Brian?
I'd like to make a motion that we pass the, where are we at here? The Bucks and Bulls, as recommended from the Division of Wildlife Resources.
Okay, do we have a second on that motion? Okay, seconded. Any discussion?
Mac?
I'd like to make an amendment to the motion. We add 10 bull elk to the Southwest Desert because of the drought and the horses. We need to take care of the habitat.
Would that be any weapon, or how would you like to disperse those?
Probably any weapon.
I'll second.
So they could get it.
I'll second that.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded that we amend the motion to accept the DWR recommendations on bucks and bulls, and the amendment is that we add 10 bulls to the Southwest unit, any weapon. And it has been seconded. All in favor?
First, so you have to vote on the amendment first.
Okay. The amendment comes first. The amendment is plus 10 bulls on the Southwest Desert to be hunted by any weapon. Do we have a second? Okay, second. Do we all in favor? Raise your hand. Any opposed? Motion carries. One opposed. Two opposed. Okay. Now we're back to the main motion of accepting the recommendations of the DWR on bucks and bulls.
I'd like to make an amendment to the motion.
Okay.
That on the Ponsagot and the Henry, there's no additional trophy tags increase. And, that's it.
So no additional trophy tags?
Increases on the Ponsagot and the Henry.
Okay. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the amendment of no additional trophy tags on the Ponsagunt and Henry units. All in favor? Raise your right hand.
We need discussion.
Excuse me. Discussion. Do we have discussion?
With your permission, I know this is kind of Sam's baby over there. I'd like to ask him, as a representative of the general public, I'm... And looking at those numbers, we're significantly over age objective, and representing the people that I do, they would like to see extra tags. Can you explain the SFW and the Ponsagunt Committee's objection to this a little better for me?
Sure, I'd love to. Back in, I think it was 2008 when we did this, we were really struggling for deer back then. We actually formed a committee, had meetings in Kanab where we went over the stuff Wade brought up in there, and we were told at that time, and I mean adamantly, we would never reach this goal with using an age objective. They really did not want to do that. So we wanted 6-year-old. They wanted to not do it at all. We were able to go through the racks and the board and get a compromise and do this for 5 years. And since then, actually, we were told that if we manage it that way, what we were going to end up doing, this was from the big game coordinator at the time, and he said, we're just going to keep reducing our trophy tags and increasing our management tags if we follow this age objective. That was his analysis of where we were going to end up. Well, here we are down the road 5 years from there, and the total opposite has happened. Right now we're looking at a decreasing buck-to-doe ratio through the management hunt, which is a success. That's what we put that there for, to keep that under control. And the population has never, we're still hurting population-wise. We have those two things going against us, but the age objective thing that we came up with, like Wade said, we just pretty much pulled this out of a hat on what we wanted to do. We felt like we wanted six-year-old bucks on the unit. They didn't want to do the age objective, and we were able to compromise through the deer plan, the racks, and the boards to come up with this theory. That's one of the reasons I ask the question, you know, on why we got to the age objective on that. But with the trend the way it is, with the fact that we are this month starting meetings on the deer plan, we would like to throw these extra tags out for this year, the increases on the Henrys on both premium units, and work this out in the deer plan to come up with a better strategy to manage these, where now that we've learned the lesson of how this actually worked with the management plan and the age objective, and have seen some proof of how it actually is going to work, we'd like the deer committee to take that into consideration and come up with a plan to manage these. Our objective on that, and our real want, is to keep increasing tags. And we definitely want to increase tags. We're not trying to selfishly just bogart tags. We would like to see increases on both of those units. But with the deer plan coming up, the negative trend in buck-to-doe ratio, the negative trend in population that we're seeing on there, we just don't feel like this is the time to start jumping the tags up and having to live with that, you know, going into this plan. Let's wait and let the deer committee discuss.
So in your opinion, this would damage what you're trying to accomplish there?
Absolutely, yeah. 9 more premium tags would definitely be a deterrent.
Okay. Brian?
I'm just sitting here, and I remember some of those. Oh, this is getting a lot of feedback. I'm sorry. I remember those meetings, and it was, when we hit these objectives, yeah, you can raise tags, because everyone was so hungry to cut the tags at the time, we were willing to say whatever we wanted to, whatever we had to cut the tags. I was at those meetings, and now we've hit those objectives, and I'm kind of torn up here, and I'm just gonna vent my feelings for a second and let the log split where it splits. But we get to the objective, and we surpass the objective, and now it's time to add tags, and we don't want to do that because there's a management plan in this year, but we based it on the management plan we had 5 years ago to get us to this. And I'm a firm believer that maybe the people closest to the problem can manage it better. I don't know. I just think that, you know, 5 years ago what we said was, when we hit it, we'll add tags. I was at these meetings just like everybody else in this room. You know, and at the time, I think it was the right choice to cut the tags. I mean, you guys have done a great job down there. I'm just confused on we got some cake, and now we're wanting to eat it, which is cool. I mean, I'm just that's just what I'm hearing.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, are we ready to vote on the amendment? Sam? Okay. All in favor for the amendment to not add any trophy deer bucks or deer tags on the Pontagon and the Henrys? Raise your hand.
1, 2, 3, 6.
6, 4. Those against? 3 against. Motion carries. 4 against? 6 to 4. Okay, motion carries. Now we're back to the original motion, that of accepting the Bucks and Bulls permit recommendations in 2014 from the DWR. All in favor? Raise your hand. Any opposed? Okay, the motion is to accept the division's recommendations on Bucks and Bulls, with the two amendments to increase 10 bulls on the Southwest Desert, any weapon, and to not add any additional trophy buck tags on the Ponsagon and the Henrys. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Unanimous. Okay, now we're down to antler list. Okay. Did we have sheep? Okay, nobody made it.
So the increase passed because nobody addressed an amendment.
Okay, yeah, because the motion was to accept the whole package. And then we had them two amendments, nobody made that amendment. Okay, let's get into the Anderless discussion, presentation. Who's going to do this presentation? Okay. Justin, are you ready?
Okay. Thank you. Tonight I'm going to present the antlerless recommendations for 2014. So to begin, we'll start with mule deer again. I know I showed this graph in the previous slide, and I'd like you to focus on the last 5 years, where we've been pretty stable on our production with fawns, ranging from 61 to 65 fawns per 100 does. And then I can't remember who asked the question. I think it might have been Sam on what does that mean. Well, it only tells half the story. And what I'd like to do, I know this isn't part of any recommendation, but I think there's a lot of interest in where our deer herds are at and what direction they're headed. And so what I wanted to show was some results of a research study that we've been doing over the last 4 or 5 years now in Utah, where we've gone to 7 or 8 different units throughout the state and radio collared a bunch of fawns and a bunch of adults on these populations. And one thing I want to point out is over the last 4 years, adult survival rates have been average or above average, at between 84 and 86%. Average is about 84 in other western states, and so we're doing pretty good on our adult survival. And if you look at the first 2 years of this study in 2010 and 2011, 53 and 52% of our fawns were surviving from one November to the next, essentially. But if you look at the last 2 years in 2012 and 2013, almost 80% of the fawns that we've radio collared have been surviving, which is really good. And so with that background, based on what we've what the fawn to doe ratios have been and then what has been surviving, I wanted to show this graph, which on the x-axis you have your years, and on the y-axis you have the number of deer in the state. Our current management plan says to manage for 350,000, and we're as close to that as we've been in a long time. We're currently just under 333,000 deer statewide, and a pretty significant increase from last year. With that background, I'd like to get into the recommendations. For antlerless deer permits, recommending an increase of 105 permits from 305 to 410. Most of that is on a portion of the Monroe Sevier Valley, is that right, Teresa? Where they're having some deer that are causing some depredation and other issues like that, and we'd like to target those animals. But other than that, we're not recommending any new hunts or boundary changes when it comes to antlerless deer. For elk, here's a graph depicting where we are statewide. Currently, our objective is just under 71,000. And last year's flights and models and all our population estimates, we were about 81,000, and a slight increase from the year before from almost 80,000. So where are we at over in the state? Because when people hear that we're over on some of our units in the state, the question always comes as to where. For this graph has the 5 regions on the x-axis and the number of elk on the y. For the southeast region, central region, and southern region, we're in really good shape. We're managing these populations to their objectives, which is good. But we do have some challenges in the northern region, especially with private lands where it's hard to get public access to some of these areas, and you have landowners that want more elk and own a lot of property up that way. And then the northeast region has some similar issues. They're about 2,000 elk over objective. Some tribal issues as well where they're holding some elk. And so that's just some background on where we're at. So what are we doing with permits? As you can see, we've steadily been increasing permits over the last 4 years. And this year, what we've done is we've taken a good, hard, honest look at how we're managing our elk populations with draw permits. And one thing that the managers did in the regions is they looked at those hunts that had very low hunter success or that were just ineffective, where you keep piling cow elk hunters on top of cow elk hunters and your harvest doesn't change. And they've eliminated a lot of those hunts and tried to put those permits in hunts that have higher success rates so we can actually get more harvest. Another thing we've done is we've been increasing our antlerless elk control permits. And what this is a permit that if you have a buck tag or a bull tag for a given unit, you can buy an antlerless elk control permit at a reduced price and harvest an elk on one of these units. So three of these units where we have a population objective of zero is the Henry Mountains, the North Santa Fe, and portions of the San Juan and Ebull unit. Last year, on units that we have difficult times harvesting elk to get populations to objective because of some of those challenges we talked about earlier, we also implement antlerless elk control permits on Nine Mile Range Creek, East Canyon, Chalk Creek, Morgan Southridge, South Slope Yellowstone, Wasatch Current Creek, Aviniquin. And this year we're recommending this for the Ogden and the Wasatch West as well. And what this does is instead of piling antlerless hunters on top of antlerless hunters, you have hunters that are already in the field trying to harvest a buck or a bull, and it's an opportunity to not increase that hunter crowding and still get an appreciable amount of harvest on some of these units. For new hunts and boundaries, I'm going to be honest, this part of the presentation always confused me in the past, because we make all these changes and I never knew. And I even came up with them as a manager sometimes. So what I've done is I've broken them up a little different. I want to talk about new hunts that already had existing boundaries. And so the South Slope Yellowstone, North Slope West Agate, Mountain Dutton, and Central Mountain South Manti, these are hunts that already take place. What we're doing is adding an additional season on the back end because they're successful. We're successful at harvesting elk on these areas, and this is a way to help us with our population regulation for antlerless elk. Next, we have just simple boundary changes to existing hunts or name changes. So Central Mountains Fair and Lower, this is just a boundary expansion to target depredating elk and elk that are going to be close to the town of Farron. Central Mountains Gordon Creek Price, this elevates the boundary. So if we have another really dry winter, hunters can just go up in elevation and target those elk that are on the other side of the boundary there. The Wasatch 17B and C antlerless elk control permit, what we'd like is for that antlerless elk control boundary to match the current deer boundary on that. So there's no confusion. If you have a deer permit for that unit, anywhere in that unit you can harvest a cow elk. And then the South Slope Bonanza Vernal, just a simple name change from South Slope Vernal Blue Mountain. Okay, next I'd like to propose new hunts. These are brand new hunts with boundary changes. So these actually required us to put a map together, new boundary descriptions and different things like that. The first is Beaver Valley. This is designed to kill some antlerless elk that are causing depredation problems and other things along that portion of the unit. Also, the Monroe Cusharon Valley. This is more of an extension on the old Greenwich hunt that we had there, and again, a way to target elk in that area. The Monroe Mount Dutton and Plateau. This is an idea where instead of ping-ponging elk from one unit to the next, meaning you hunt them on this, so they run over here, and then you hunt them there, and they run back. We decided to make this one unit, and hunters can go to where the elk are. We feel like we can get some harvest there and keep pressure on these units. Chalk Creek, that had a bunch of small units. We just combined it into one, and so that way hunters can go to where the elk are at. Ogden, recommending early, middle, and late hunts. They're severely over on their elk, and this is a way to get some harvest that we desperately need there. And then the Plateau Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes. This is an avenue to hunt the whole unit instead of just the east or west as we've done in the past. Moving on to doe pronghorn permits, recommending a decrease from 962 to 669. The heavy majority of that is coming from the northern region, the Ogden, Morgan, Cache, Southridge, I get whatever those units are. I'd have to look again. But it's one combined unit up there. And their last survey, they weren't coming up with these pronghorn. They've been very aggressive, and they want to harvest more. And then for antlerless moose permits, again, no permits this year based on some of the poor survival rates we're seeing with our moose. New hunts and boundary changes for doe pronghorn. Last November, in December, the Raxon Board passed the Plateau and the Cache Morgan Southridge Ogden units. There was a change to the area that we hunted bucks, and these recommendations are just to match the antlerless portion, so the buck and the antlerless has the same boundary. And then the Mount Dutton, Ponsagant, and Johns Valley, this has its own unique hunt boundary to target pronghorn where we want them and help keep some harvest off the Johns Valley unit. So, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Any public questions? Hang on just a minute. We got a guy coming.
What's the cow-to-calf ratio?
Would you please state your name?
And Pete Yardley. I'm a rancher from Beaver. Okay. I'm curious what the cow-to-calf ratio, what the fawn ratio is on the Beaver.
Okay. You have somebody that can answer that?
Bradley, what do you got for the Beaver? What's that? 52? It's 52.
What was that answer?
52 calves per 100 cows on the Beaver.
So about 50%?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead and come on. Oh, did you have a card?
Yeah, I gave it to somebody.
Okay, was you doing the card or just having a question?
I have a question.
Okay.
Okay, in this area, we have two big elk populations. We have them on the south in South Creek area, and we have them on the north in the Sulphurdale Pine Creek area. And I was just wondering what the number of elk would be in the Pine Creek Sulphurdale area. Could you give me a figure like that?
I'll need some help from the regions on some of these site-specific questions.
Okay. I would like to know how many elk we have on the Sulphurdale Pine Creek area. This is the north part of the Beaver.
The answer to that question will vary depending on the time of year. I mean, we get a lot more of the elk coming down in the winter than we have there in the summer. So that is a difficult question depending on what time of year it is.
How about during the summer then? When we're on the range with cattle.
During the summer, we estimate that there are probably around 400 to 450. Closer. Are you talking closer to the freeway, to I-70, that corner, or how?
I'm talking just above I-70 to the east, where the forest would be located.
Okay, yes, around.
That goes clear to the top of the mountain.
Right, and we're estimating around 400 to 450.
Okay. Any other questions from the public? John?
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. I was originally on that range ride on the Parowan Front. There are two antlerless hunts on there. The numbers have been 150 for several years, but we were told on that range ride that we need to take 500 off of that unit. Has those numbers been discussed or considered, or has the division even looked at those numbers?
Again, this is probably one better answered by the region, I'd imagine.
Okay. Somebody from the regional office?
On the Parowan Front, over the last probably 5 years, we've been removing about 150 deer a year through the hunt. Last 2 years, we've been removing roughly 100 deer through the captures and transplant. again, this year we are anticipating doing both of those. Taking the number up to 500 this year wasn't really considered because of the anticipated removal of by the transplant.
So. Okay, thank you. Any other questions, John?
John Keeler, Utah Farm Bureau. Is there any consideration given to the aspen regeneration problem on the Monroe Mountain in these numbers? Because the last 2 years there's been decisions made to increase that those numbers on the Monroe Mountain, and there is a problem there. And as we've discussed it with the working group, they wonder why the numbers are continued to be grown on the Monroe Mountain. And I see in your numbers that there are increases in antlerless in some of the surrounding units, which they rotate, so I can understand that. But there is a problem already with the current numbers, and yet decisions in the last two meetings have been to increase those numbers.
Okay, can somebody from the division answer that question? Teresa?
Vance is out tonight. He's got a bad back, or he would be here to answer this question. We are issuing, I think, recommending 160 permits specifically for the Monroe, and then we have 150 permits on that complex, including the Monroe, Dutton, and Plateau. That being said, we do take that aspen regeneration problem into account. In the agreement we have with them, once they implement some habitat work, then after that work is done, we will do recommend cow reductions.
I thought the number from last year is 90 less.
Specifically for the Monroe, but we also have that 150 that can also be taken from that unit, and also increased quite a bit on the Boulder, and a fair amount of permits still on Mount Dutton.
When the mountain goat unit was made on the Mount Dutton, there was a recommendation to form a working group, and I just wonder what the timeline on that is.
We've talked about that recently. Probably this summer we'll get that group together, John.
Okay.
Darrell Yardley, I'm a rancher, and I own land out in the Pine Creek area. I just wondered what happened to the deer that were fenced off in Dave Edwards' piece of ground last year. He had between 1,200 and 1,500 a night on his property. They were fenced out. What happened to them? Because my son and I, when we were out plowing, were just the valley to the north. He looked out and saw this big herd of deer, and he said, Dad, there must be 300 head of deer in that one herd. And I've seen between 50 and 75 in another little bunch closer to the fields. So I'd like to know what happened to those deer, where they went.
Okay. Probably need a local.
We don't have a real definitive answer for that because none of those animals were radio collared. Once it was fenced off, we just have to assume that they've dispersed to the south, north, and west. We can't say exactly where they've gone.
Okay, we'll have to watch it then.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the public?
I'm Pete Yardley, I'm a rancher. Kind of a question arose when they told how many elk we had on the north end. That's less than a tenth of the whole beaver allotment, and you got over a fourth of your elk on it. Right now we're looking at cuts on our cattle, and this is our third time. We've done voluntary cuts. I think we need to do something to help us manage elk to save our allotments on that end. If we've got over 400 on less than 10% of the allotment, and it is in the summer, because I have hay fields in the bottom, and I do have them in my hay fields in the summer. They don't leave in the summer. They don't stay in the fields all summer, but they don't leave that side of the mountain.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Go ahead.
I'm Lee R. Yardley. I'm a rancher out there too, and my biggest question was the management that you guys do. I'd like to kind of know how that works, how you measure the grass, or how many elk can be in one area. And I was wondering if it goes in with the Forest Service management, if we discuss it among the two. Like if we're having cuts with our cows, why ain't we cutting wildlife too? Because they're all in the same range.
Okay. We get a response to that.
Justin, do you want us to respond to how management objectives are formed on units and at the statewide scale?
Yeah. Help me with the question one more time. I apologize.
So the question was, you know, how do we arrive at our management objectives?
Okay.
Both at the statewide scale and on a unit scale, and is the Forest Service involved with setting those objectives?
Okay. So to answer this question, the sum of the statewide plan population objectives, it's all just a sum of individual unit plans. And when we wrote the statewide elk plan, we had representation from the BLM and the Forest and our federal partners. And when these unit plans are created as well, that's where population objectives are set, and there is input from Forest Service and BLM on not only the population objective but management strategies as well. So.
And not only BLM and Forest Service, we try very hard to make sure that the agricultural community is involved with all of those committees as well. And if you have an interest in being involved with that on the Beaver unit, we could certainly make you aware when that's taking place.
Okay, any other questions to the division?
In light that there could be an increase in the drought conditions, what is the process for emergency hunts in case it gets severe?
John, thanks for asking that, because I meant to talk about that in my presentation, given some of the situations down here with the drought conditions. And I really am glad you asked that, and I failed to mention that. One thing that Kevin and I and Teresa have talked about over the last several months is things like the snowpack and other things like that or the lack thereof down here. And so these recommendations, there are pretty good increases in the southern region, but this spring we're going to be looking at things like the precipitation and even into the early summer. And if conditions warrant, we have no problems going back to our wildlife board this summer and asking for emergency increases due to drought conditions. And so this with these recommendations, there are increases, but more than happy to look at that all spring and summer and monitor that, and that's something we're willing to commit to do. So. I think it's just communication. You know, it's looking at the environmental conditions and seeing what other types of pressures are out there and being responsible. At the end of the day, we want healthy rangelands and as well. And if we don't have healthy habitats, we're not going to have healthy livestock or elk or deer. So the range is certainly a condition. If there's drought conditions that we feel are excessive, we will take increased recommendations to the board this summer.
Okay. Any other questions from the public? Okay, we'll move on to questions from the RAC. Okay, Brian.
I know that we don't manage elk to a bull to cow ratio, but we can all agree that that's somewhat important. So you get a unit like San Juan Elk Ridge, which is a 7 to 8 year old classification. We've got a population objective of 1,300. I've heard that the bull to cow ratio is 2 bulls for 1 cow. And I'm just confused as all get out if we're under objective and we're hunting spikes to try to control that number, which I'm in favor of. What else can be done, and what's the end goal? And this isn't the only unit. These units that we do 7 to 8 year old classifications on, we're running into this higher bull to cow ratio, which you have to do to get to your 7 to 8 year old classification. So I'm not I understand that, but what's the end game when we hit 3-1 or 4-1 and we have a herd, you know, anyways?
Yeah. First of all, we're not at 2-1. We're not at 2-1. And honestly, we're not at 1-1. I know that number's thrown out a bunch as well. But with that said, there's certainly a high bull to cow ratio on the set. I don't know. I can model it, I don't know what the model is. But you're exactly right. When you're managing for 7.5 to 8-year-olds, you have to stockpile bulls. So your bull to cow ratio on that unit is going to be lower than the Manti or the Cash or one of these. And each unit's different with that. But categorically, yes, they have to be higher. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I can call Guy Wallace tonight and get that number and relay it to you, but I don't know. I didn't. You try to think of everything before this meeting, and that's not what I thought of, right? So, yeah, but certainly it's not 2-1. So no, it's not 1-1. It wouldn't surprise me if it's close, but we're not 1-1. And I know because I was a wildlife manager down there, and we did model that population year after year. And certainly we have more cows and bulls on that unit. But with that said, it's a higher bull to cow ratio than any of the other units that we manage down there. So, but by design. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions from the rack? Okay, Mac.
What's the population objective for the beaver unit on elk?
Let me grab my paperwork, unless you know off the top of your head. Population objective on the beaver, 1050.
Are we over on that?
What are we? How many elk we have on that unit? 1,100 on that unit.
I got another question for you. What right do the ranchers have to feed the elk not only in the winter, and deer in the winter, but summertime also? What right does the wildlife have in the field?
What do you mean by that, Mac? What right do wildlife have?
What right do we have them come in our fields? If they're in their fields, what are we going to do about it?
Sure. Yeah, if you're talking like depredation issues where we have deer and elk coming into a landowner's field.
I can see. I have it in the wintertime, but in the summertime, I still have deer, and these guys in Beaver have elk.
Yeah.
In their fields. What are we going to do about it?
I guess the straightest answer is we want to work with you on it. It's not something we want to ignore. We don't want to grow our deer or elk populations on the backs of the agricultural community because that's not a healthy thing to do. There's ways to work through those to minimize these damages, remove some of these animals through hunting strategies, all the way swinging the pendulum to division removal. I mean, it's something that we don't take lightly. We don't want to grow these populations on the back of the agricultural community.
Well, I think we're doing it because when the does raise their fawns in the field, cow elk raise their calves in the field, what else does those calves and fawns know? That's where they're going to come.
Yeah, and that's a pattern we need to break. And that's why every time we have these situations where we have public wildlife on private land, it's very important that the division at the local level works with these landowners to come up with a game plan. And there's a lot of unique situations with what landowners are willing to tolerate, what they're not, and there's a whole bunch of tools to deal with those types of situations. And I guess the straightest answer I can give you is working with you at the local level and trying to minimize this damage if we can, Mac.
Okay, do we have any other questions from the rack?
Speaking specifically for the BLM and the Kanab Field Office, I noticed a couple of comments came up tonight about permittees, grass, how measurements are taken, how we go about that. We've done a lot of work in the Kanab Field Office on habitat. Somebody mentioned this evening 20,000 acres sitting on the shelf that we want to do, or 20 years, I'm sorry, a lot more acres than that, but 20 years worth. We got a buttload of NEPA sitting there already approved, so we can go out and do habitat work. But one of the things I ask all my range staff to do is to invite permittees out, invite landowners out, so they can see how we do some of those measurements. They see how we collect trend. If you guys are looking at getting letters in the mail, you're looking at reductions or something like that, I'd encourage you to get with Forest Service range cons, BLM range cons, and go out and look at those things together so that each of you have a better understanding, particularly when we get farther into this so-called drought that we never seem to get out of, really. as it gets worse. I'm hoping that the BLM and Associated Forest Service offices are working with you guys to go out on the ground and look at those things together.
Okay.
These cuts are not because of the drought. It's because of the, I mean, I think part of it's management, but it's not so much on our end. We've been trying to do some burns to rehab and that, so we've over had to go in some other pastures. And then your fence on I-70 held the elk up all one winter pretty much on us. And with that, I mean, so like I said, we've got over a fourth of the elk on less than 10th of the allotment, and we're increasing, by his figures, of 100 cows a year on that end, and I don't know what your, and that would be 100 bulls on what they kill, you know, and I don't know what that percentage would be. I mean, we need some help on it. We want to save our allotment. We took a voluntary 10% cut. We've now thrown at the forest that we'll take a voluntary 20% cut, till we get back in all of our rotations to try to save it. But we can't save it with a fourth of the elk on a less than 10th of the allotment of the mountain. We're just going to be done. And I think we have a right to run, to be there too. Thank you.
It'd be my hope that the DWR, the Associated Office, you guys go out and look at those things together. If it's not drought, drought's certainly going to be part of it, but it's only going to get worse. It appears. So I'm hoping that what you do is communicate with those officers, go out together and take a look at it.
Thank you. Any other questions from the RAC? From the RAC. Okay, having none, let's move into the comment period from the public. We have Amy Barker. And those of you that want to make a comment, please fill out your card so we can get you in the line.
So I'm reading this letter on behalf of Alan Alley, the Forest Supervisor of the Fish Lake National Forest, and also on behalf of the Ranger District. So I'm Amy Barker. I'm the Beaver District Ranger. Jason Kling, Richfield District Ranger, Del Barnhurst, Fillmore, and Kurt Robbins, Fremont River. These comments provided by the Forest Service to the 2014 Bucks, Bulls, and Once in a Lifetime and Antlerless Permit Recommendations. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on the upcoming discussion and value our relationship with the Division. The Forest Service is committed to assisting the Division in managing for sustainable populations of big game by providing quality habitat that is well distributed across the national forest landscapes. We recognize the necessity for the Division to manage for population numbers that are in balance with habitat conditions and support this effort. We would like to make the following suggestions for consideration. The Fish Lake National Forest is in the process of preparing an EIS, or an environmental impact statement, to manage a 40,000 acre plus landscape to increase the distribution, quality, and quantity of aspen habitat. We recommend that the Division consider short-term aggressive antlerless management to help decrease potential impacts to aspen regeneration on Monroe Mountain. This will help ensure the success of this large landscape-level aspen management project, which will help reestablish aspen in the conifer-dominated landscapes. Regenerating aspen across this landscape will help provide the necessary diversity of cover and forage that will sustain increased numbers of wildlife through time. As you are aware, southern Utah is experiencing drought conditions, approximately 50% of normal precip levels compared to the northern part of Utah. These drought conditions are likely to have impacts to many species of wildlife and domestic livestock. We recommend that drought conditions on Monroe Mountain and the Beaver Unit and the potential impacts to livestock operators be considered prior to making any final antlerless and or hunting season recommendations to the Utah Wildlife Board. This will help balance total ungulate use with these drought-related conditions. We appreciate the opportunity to provide comments and look forward to working with the state in the future. The Forest Service looks forward to further efforts to manage the diverse landscapes that occur on national forest lands into joint monitoring opportunities in the future. If you have any questions, please contact Ron Rodriguez or Alan Rowley. And I have 5 copies of the letter, so I'll give those to you guys.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Gib Yardley. And want to remind everybody that this is comments on the antlerless hunts. Yes.
I see that you've increased the numbers that they want to take off the West Desert this year over last. But with the drought and everything, we think that we still need to take more cows off. We'd like to recommend 450 cows off the West Desert. And on the Panguitch Lake unit, we'd like to see 250 cows taken off or because of these drought conditions. And because you've got to take more off if you're going to hold them steady, or else we're going to have such a big increase that we can't feed them. And then I'd also like to say that we don't think we always get an accurate count on these elk and things. A lot of times we've had cattlemen and sheepmen that wanted to go on the counts, and they don't stop and pick them up. And we think that we deserve that consideration probably to stop and pick us up and go on these counts. And also, I'd like to commend the sportsmen that close the gates and take care of the fences. We try to protect these ranges with a rest rotation program, and some inconsiderate people cut the fences and leave the gates down. And if you'll put those gates up and watch those fences, we certainly appreciate it, and we want to thank you to do it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And Lee Yardley?
Well, I pretty much the same questions I had before, but with the ground cover,
step up to the mic.
How do you guys measure the ground cover, the grass that's left, and from year to year, and from how many elk you got there? Because it, like this year, we got a drought. If you guys decide to cut permit, have to decrease them, it's going to take you a year to do that. And where we're taking it this year, your guys will be taking it next year. And I just wondered if we could get one of you guys to come to our management programs and discuss more to our Fish and Forest Service, because them poor guys get called quite a few dirty names sometimes.
Lee, I'll answer that. I'll volunteer myself or one of my biologists, either or, to come when you're discussing that. I'd be glad to.
Okay, thank you.
Pete Yardley.
We have discussed the elk numbers with our forest, and our forest says they can't do nothing about it, that they can't control. You guys set all the numbers. That's why we get the cuts, because we're the only ones they can control. Our suggestion is, my suggestion in a way, if we're increasing, and by their count we got that many cows on that north end, they're only issuing 145 tags, let's put them on the north end, where they've got a fourth of the elk on a tenth of the allotment, and see if they can get them within management and scatter them to parts of the other allotments, so they ain't all just affecting a few ranchers alone. Thank you.
Thank you. Darrell Yardley.
I'm Darrell Yardley. I'm a rancher, and I've watched 250% cuts on the cows. I've also watched a month taken off in the spring on the cows on the Forest Service. And we've been working for about the last 10 or 12 years, and I'd like to really thank Amy because she's got some burning done out there. It's been a good thing. We got some seed put on. I'm not sure how much, but at least we got seed on some of that, and I hope that we can just get enough rain to keep it alive. I'd like to see a little more on revegetation and reseedings in that area. I think it would help immensely. And I would suggest that we go to one of these trophy deer that they auction off, or trophy elk, and see if we could get that money impacted in that area to help remove some of the cedar trees and make the land more productive. I think it would be well worth our time, and it would be beneficial to the elk, the deer, and all of the other wildlife that are there. Okay? I think one of the problems, or one of the ways to solve our problem, is to reseed and manage it as good as we can, and then order a whole bunch of rain to help out.
Thank you. Got Lee Tracy.
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative, Southern Unit. We recommend on the Parowan Front that, hold your hats now, guys, 200 more tags, 100 tags to each one of those two hunts, and that we make them youth tags. If we have to split the hunts, that would be fine. But we're trying to recruit youth, and that's a great way to do it. Just by way of information, I had one of those tags last year, and I drove up to the Paragon turnoff that goes up along the frontage road that goes up along the freeway, trying to get to Cottonwood. But I had my deer long before I ever got to Cottonwood. I took that doe right off the frontage road. On one of those BLM triangles that are in those areas. So that's a fairly easy hunt, and I think the youth would really enjoy that. And by the way, we do approve of the buck and bull recommendations that you've passed, including the amendments. Thanks.
Thank you. Gene Boardman.
I noticed that the recommendations for the new hunts, particularly the one on the Dutton, Monroe, and Plateau, was a late hunt. And I'd like to see more early hunts over there. Them damned elk on the Dutton are all backwards. They're right down on the valley floor in August and September, and you go there in December, and you can't cut a track on the valley floor. They're clear up on top, up to their bellies in snow. And for a feeble old man such as myself, I've been in enough trouble on the Dutton before, and I don't want to get into a lot of more trouble. I'd like to see more early hunting on those antlerless elk hunts. Thank you.
Thank you. Wilton Gates and Hours.
Gates and Hours, a cattleman. Some of this was old business, but I remember when they planted elk over on the Beaver in the late 60s, and the fishing game promised the cattlemen that they would keep the elk under management, because none of these elk on this country is deciduous to this area on this side of it was only over on the Fish Lake on the Monroe side. And they said they were going to keep them under management, and they've kind of lost that part. And the other things, one of the other things is the water. All these water springs and that have been improved by the the ranchers, the stockmen, along with help from the CCs and that, and these elk, and the deer's not so bad, but the elk get in there and raise hell with it, and it's hard to get any money from the fish and game to do us any good. And I've been told personally, when they tried to cut us 100% on this Pine Creek Indian Creek allotment, that the BLM, our range manager, told me personally that the fish and game was looking to take over that Pine Creek Indian Creek allotment east of the interstate. They was going to take it over and give it to the fish and game for the elk and the deer. And he told me that, but we did got the discussion back, and we did get some of our cattle out there, and we got cut time, but it's they're hunting for some private properties, I guess. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Stanton, is it Glear or Glean? Glebe.
Hello there tonight. Most of you know me. I'm Stanton Glebe. I'm representing the Monroe Mountain Ranchers. We've always got the same problem. We've got too many elk on that mountain. And it's the same problem these people out here got on the West Desert with horses. But the big thing is, first of all, I'm wanting to get that point across. We've got too many elk there, and you need to do something with them. But that being said, there's a fight going on right now that involves all of us. And that's where I've been the last few days. It's with a man named Cliven Bundy down there in Bunkerville, Nevada. And he's fighting for all of our rights. He's fighting for the rights. Why we got this herd of elk here is because we can't raise deer or sage hens. Because years ago, them environmentalists was trying to put all of us ranchers out of business. And if we don't stand with this man and defend these rights, I'd heard of an environmentalist down there has been trying to put him out of business for 20 years. He didn't leave on account of that desert tortoise. He's still there. And he's making a good stand of her. And this thing's getting national attention. It's on Fox News today, and it's on all these news channels. Maybe some of you have heard it. But you want to pay attention to that. And especially these ranchers right here. We got to stand with that man. We got to make her stand, because when we make it, we all win. Even you people that want to hunt anything win. Because when we win, we're going to start putting them environmentalist buggers back in their place, and we're going to start putting these counties back in charge, and we're going to start taking our country back and putting a herd of deer back here and them sage hens back here. And then you don't need this giant herd of elk that's out of control. Iron County's made a heck of a stand over there. I think they pretty well stopped them cattle. They were going to bring them in here and try to sell them over in this Richfield auction tomorrow. But I'm hearing they're not coming. But whether they are or not, I don't know. But I want everybody here to know that we're making a stand right there in that Richfield auction tomorrow. And all we're doing is just a whole bunch of people showing up. There's going to be news people. But I think they're getting the message that we're not going to take any more of this environmental BS. And we're not going to let any more ranchers go under because of some goofy desert tortoise or something else. Like I say, that man has stood for 20 years down there, and the way he stood behind the sheriff that's protected him. And finally, this sheriff, them feds come in, and they scared him off this time. But the sheriff now has resigned because he's done the wrong thing, and they don't dare move them cattle out of any county down there because these other sheriffs have said they're going to get arrested if they do. Anyway, what I'm saying is this man has made a stand for the rights that we all need to defend. And if we defend that right, all this stuff will take care of itself. So anyway, anybody that can be at that Richfield auction tomorrow that wants to support freedom, I say be there. Thank you.
Thank you. Have Gary Allen.
I'm Gary Allen. I want you guys to stop and figure out what your calf crop is. If you want to do something, figure the calf crop. It's not hard to figure out. You're going to have 60, 70, 80%. Take care of that many head of elk every year, not just one year, every year. Because if you don't, we ain't going to have no forest to go to. We got rangers that stood up here and talked, but they're not gonna put you guys, they're not gonna cut the numbers on you guys. They're gonna cut the numbers on us. And we're just like Clive and Bundy. We're only gonna take it so long, and then we're gonna take a stand too. I mean, you're not gonna run all of us out of business. We're gonna pick up the old Winchester and we're gonna take care of business if that's what it takes. And it don't have to come to that. It could come to some common sense that you got a calf crop and you can't just keep going on and on and on. You've got to take care of it.
Yeah, thank you. Joe Yardley?
I'm in agreement with the other cattlemen. I run cattle with Pete and Leard and Drell on our forest allotment, and a lot of our problem is environmental issues, so I'm glad that the environmental problem's been brought up. So thank you, Mr. Gleave. I believe we need to work together on these environmental issues, because if they get rid of us, they're going to come after you next. And also on the private land issue, on my small piece of ground, there was 120 elk counted on it here last week. And with the reduced numbers on these forest ranges and forest allotments and different things because of environmental issues and too many elk populations, I'm going to have to start getting more aggressive and competing for feed on my own ground. I'd also like to talk about a little bit about the vouchers that you give out to landowners to help take care of the elk problem in the summer months. For a lot of years, you'd give us these vouchers, but we were limited on where we could hunt them. We was limited to private ground only. And most of these elk, they come in at night and they're gone before morning. Well, this last year, we was able to get 2-mile buffers, and I'd like to thank you for that and hope that keeps going on. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll move into discussion by the rack. Okay, John, come out. Go ahead.
I'd just like to follow up with some of these ranchers' comments. I was down at the Utah Arizona Range Workshop today, and a fellow that works for a government agency came up and handed me a paper that showed the southern part of the state and northern part of Arizona and Nevada, and all the things that they have to manage for. He says it's not just one thing. There were at least, I think there was 18 different plants and animals and all kinds of concerns. And we have one before us that could make all of these look pretty insignificant, and that's the sage grouse. If that's ever listed with habitat, it'll make the desert tortoise thing look pretty minuscule. And that's what they're talking about. And with the wild horse or feral horse issue in the West Desert and everything else, these ranchers are up against the wall. And they've testified in meeting after meeting, if something doesn't happen, they'll be out of business. And the comment that was made, once the farmers and ranchers are gone, they're coming after the hunters, is absolutely true. We need to think about that.
Okay, thank you. And we have Chris Smith.
I'm a little overdressed.
Would you introduce yourself?
Chris Smith, farmer and rancher here in the valley.
Okay.
I'm a little overdressed, and I apologize. I had another meeting. But I agree with all the ranchers here, and I appreciate what you're trying to do in reduction. But as everybody said, there is way too many. On just a little piece of property we have just north of Beaver, a few miles out, historically there's never been elk there, but they're there in the last 3 or 4 years. So I don't know what your stand is on historically, or what can we do, but they're there all summer and basically all winter. But we appreciate your help, and the farmers need some help, and you need to consider what we can do to work together. But anyway, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, now moving to the discussion with the RAC. We have right now before us that came out of the comments, increase in Southwest Desert antlerless elk by 400, increase it to 450, increase the Panguitch Lake antlerless elk to 250, put the beaver tags on the north end of the unit, more habitat work on the north end of beaver unit in seedings, 200 more tags on the Parowan front for antlerless deer, and that would be going to the youth, more early tags on the Dutton and Monroe, too many elk on the Monroe, and then base antlerless recommendations on calf crop, remove it annually, and then keep buffers on antlerless vouchers. Okay, discussion by the RAC.
How do you work your antlerless control permits? Is it too late to do that, or could that be done on Monroe?
So is the question, could the RAC make a recommendation to have antlerless control permits on the Monroe?
Yeah, that's the question.
That's part of this process. So, yeah, that would be a motion that could be made and then have it go through the process.
Okay. Thank you, Dale. Any other discussion by the RAC? Okay, Sean?
Yeah, most of the antlerless recommendations are made based on scientific information models, and you know they're trying to balance that herd with that population objective. And I'm a little uncomfortable in just throwing out numbers of tags without some kind of backing to it. I'm also real fascinated though with this emergency hunt procedure. Has that ever been done before?
Yeah, Sean, I think it was 2 years ago, and Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, that when we had some really dry conditions in the state where we had an emergency board meeting in July, and we increased antlerless elk tags on several units across the state. So there has been a precedent set, and I've personally been in contact with the director's office, and I know it's on Justin's radar screen, that we're open to doing that again if we need to.
It sounds like Beaver County might be a good test case this year to apply that, but I'd be a lot more comfortable in going through a process like that than us making a decision right now without a whole lot of information to change antlerless tags. That's just my feelings.
Okay.
Chairman, I've got a question.
Okay, Rusty.
Kevin, on that same note, could the timing be to where it was the same summer, so would you have to hunt them in the fall, or could you hunt them when there was the issue? The fall, it's too late.
I think the bottleneck there would be, you know, how soon could we get hunters on the ground? We have on every unit, you know, there's the way we normally go about this, there's more people that apply than we have tags for. And so if we increase the number of tags, typically they would we would go through the people that applied for hunting on that unit and offer them, you know, any additional tags that are made. So it would typically go into season dates that are already on the books, but certainly the board would have discretion to move it to the earlier hunts if that's what made the most sense at the time.
Okay, Mike. I have a question and then a discussion. On these objectives that you have on elk, what percent is producing cows? For instance, on the beaver, you say your population objective is 1,050. What percent of that is producing cows? It's going to have a cat.
Yeah. So what we do is if we have 1,000 animals on a unit, what we do, with our models, like Sean was talking about earlier, we look at how many calves we have, how many bulls and then how many cows. And then we look at production, and we do get that those data because we're out there in the summer looking at the production from every year. And so based on that, that's what we're trying to harvest with these permits moving forward if we want to keep the population in check. So, that's certainly a number that we have to have in order to manage these populations, and we have it.
What is the number?
For the beaver?
Yeah.
Who's got that model? Riley?
On average, what we see with a spike unit like that, our bull-cow ratio runs somewhere around 30, 40, maybe 50 bulls per 100 cows. And then on general, a unit will produce about 50 calves per 100. So roughly half of that is a productive cow, and then half of those cows produce a calf. And then you have natural mortality that goes in with those calves and those cows. And then the one thing that's not illustrated in that table where we have permits is depredation tags, which Riley can speak more to the numbers on that.
So on that beaver unit specifically, we have been trying to, like was mentioned before, put most of our tags on the north end, and so that's why there was a new hunt recommendation there to be the new Beaver Valley, is to give a broader range and a bigger area to hunt. So we moved that, and on top of that, trying to be liberal with depredation tags, we were trying to address some of those over-objective number. Does that answer your question?
If you have a population that's actually 1,050, and half of them are cows, right?
Right.
And you only get a 50% calf crop?
Right.
Okay. I'll do some math here.
Okay. Any other discussion from the rack? Okay, seeing none, we're ready to move to entertain motions.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion we accept the antlerless recommendations of the division as proposed.
Okay, it has been moved that we accept the antlerless recommendations as proposed. Any discussion? Okay, second. Moved and seconded. Discussion?
I want to make an amendment.
Okay.
I would, on this, my math on the beaver, for the recruitment, we've got to be 250 total tags. You've got 145. Okay, so we're actually going to increase the herd if we don't take them off. I'm talking about
half
just
half
recruitment
of those
coming
calves
in.
Bulls, so.
I'm not talking about bulls. Well, they just said half of them was cows, and the other half, they've got a 50% calf crop.
So, and on those are just the cow tags that we're talking about as well. We have the bulls, the spikes, and our mitigation and depredation permits that go into that as well. So there are other permits that...
I understand, but I'm talking about the recruitment coming in.
Right.
I'm not talking about how many you're taking off. I'm talking about the recruitment coming in. You've got to take the recruitment coming in off all of these hunts. And you're not doing it on the Fish Lake, nor the Dutton, nor the Boulder Plateau.
Okay, do we have the amendment?
Okay, I want to make my amendment to the motion. I want to increase the antlerless elk to Southwest Desert to 450. The increase to Pangas Lake to 250. Increase the beaver to 250. Take additional 200 antlerless deer permits from Parowan. And I would like to increase the Dutton to 250. And the Monroe, we just talked about that, increase it to 250 antlerless. And the Fish Lake to 1,000 antlers.
Okay, let me see if I can restate this. The amendment on the table is, or on the floor to be considered, is increase Southwest Desert Elk to 450. Increase the Panguitch Lake antlerless elk to 250. Increase the Beaver Mountain antlerless elk to 250. Increase the antlerless doe on Parwin Front. Did we have a number on that?
200.
By 200. Increase Mount Dutton antlerless elk by 250. Increase Monroe antlerless elk by 250. And increase the Fish Lake by 1,000 antlerless elk.
Two 1,000.
Okay.
And on the Dutton and on Monroe, is that to increase,
yes,
250?
Yes, two.
Not increase 250. That's above, but to take it up to 250.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we have a second. All in favor, raise your hand. For discussion? Excuse me. Go ahead.
Did somebody second it?
Yes.
I need to look at something here. I think they're already taking 800 cows off the Dutton.
No, let's see.
Yeah, there's about five hunts on the Dutton. I think the total is 800.
Well, no, on the new one. The, Lane, I think it's 650. But including that, you're talking about the extra hunt of 150 that goes to either whatever unit you want to go to.
If you just look at this sheet that's got the whole unit on it, it's got 800.
No, you've got another one at the end.
It's got a total of 800.
I think Teresa can clarify.
Yeah.
It is 650 specifically on Mount Dutton, and then we did, we've got the mega complex with the three units at 150. So that, I think, was clumped in with Dutton to bring it up to 800. So Dutton alone is 650.
250, which is way below what is existing.
Okay, then let's increase it total to 1,050.
So,
yeah, listen, we've got a drought, plus these elk are interchangeable with Dutton, Monroe, Fish Lake. And we just got a letter from the Forest Service saying we need to reduce them in order to take the habitat be viable. I think the Wildlife Board has to come to the table and take some elk off. Okay, the ranchers has taken voluntary cuts. Okay, they take voluntary cuts and sell their cows. It's going to take them a long time to come back to where they were originally, just like the elk is, and that's what we need to do. You got a problem on all of these hunts, all of these ranges with aspen, particularly Monroe. I was to a meeting with a bunch of permittees. And Alan Raleigh was there. He said the Monroe Mountain has more elk, visible elk, than any of the other ranges. Maybe that's because of easy access. I don't know. But he said that. That's why he wrote the letter. That's why these permittees are getting cut. The Forest Service says we need to take them off. And I think the RAC Board need to come to the table and help. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And then something else is going to happen. The ranchers are going to stand up and start taking them themselves.
Mac, let me first make a comment. I think we do need to change somehow, and I don't know how to do it, the relationship between the agricultural community and the sportsmen, and figure out a way to make that more of a partnership. And that's something that we need to work on together, and I'll certainly agree with you on that. Let me restate your amendment, because I think I got it down, but make sure Mike and I've got it. You want to increase the Southwest Desert up to 450. Panguitch Lake up to 250. And what's Panguitch Lake at right now, Jason? No, 140 permits, so it would be taking it from 140 to 250. Increase doe tags on the Parowan front by 200, so that would be going from 200 to 350. 150 to 350. Increase antlerless tags on the beaver up to 250, and it's currently at 145. And on the Dutton, I think you, so the increase there would be to take it to 1,050. So increase it 250 from where it is right now. It's currently at 800. Increase the Monroe to 250. What's the Monroe recommendation currently, Teresa?
160.
Okay, so that would be an increase from 160 to 250. And on the Fish Lake to increase from where it is right now, which I think is about 800 up to
800 to go to 1,000.
Up to 1,000. Did I capture? I want to make sure that, because there's going to be a vote here, that everybody knows what they're voting on the amendment. Did I get that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Or not, Mr. Chairman.
Kevin,
how's that?
Okay, now we're ready to entertain a vote on the motion. Or when discuss the amendment. We're still in discussion.
Kevin, can I say something?
Brian.
And this would be asking Mac if he could change that and take the deer out of it. Let's do the elk and then do a separate one for the deer so we don't have this all thrown together.
Okay, that's true. Let's do the deer separate.
Okay.
And do the elk separate.
Deer is removed from the amendment.
So you need to ask Dale if he agrees on that.
Yeah,
Dale seconded it.
Dale, do you agree on that? Okay. Any other discussion? Brian?
I just got a quick comment here. 15 minutes ago, I made a comment from my own observations that I believe that the San Juan Elk Ridge unit was at two bulls to one cow, and I got laughed at. And I'm fine with that. I have no problem with people laughing at me. But here we are, and the division's making a recommendation based on a scientific model, and Matt can say, well, let's just raise these all up, and it's okay. And I'm not disagreeing with you, Mac. I'm not. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that these guys work awfully dang hard to have a scientific model. We've got a process in place for an emergency hunt to add these if the range permits it. And there's a precedence. We blew light special Fish Lake. I don't know how many times, and they keep coming back. The fishing game's not afraid to issue a ton of tags if it's dry. They've done it in the past, and I believe that they're going to do it again. Kevin's mentioned that he's extremely committed to that. These biologists have mentioned they're committed to that. I just wonder how we throw a dart and come up with these numbers.
Okay, thank you, Brian.
Brian, I'm not throwing a dart. I'm looking at recruitment coming in.
You're not counting elk bulls that we shoot.
I'm talking about recruitment, not the total elk taken off. I'm talking about the calves coming in. But what about the cows coming in? The calves coming in. That's recruitment we've got to talk about.
Okay, let's move on.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add my 2 cents worth on that. I'll just take the proposal on the Dutton. 1,050 cows, plus you throw the spikes on there, plus the limited entry bulls, on a total population of 1,900. We're putting a price on these elk's head of about two-thirds of that herd, and I just think that's just way too draconian and radical. I can't accept that.
Okay.
And that would extrapolate over onto those other proposals.
All right, thank you.
We can count 1,900.
Any other discussion by the RAC?
That county, really.
Those elk are interchangeable between those four districts at any point in time. Okay.
Okay, let's go and take a vote. All in favor?
You're voting on the amendment
as read by Kevin. All those in favor, raise your right hand or raise your hand. 2. Those opposed? 2, 3. Seven? Eight? Eight opposed. The amendment fails. Now we're back to the original. Okay, yes, we have an amendment that got, do you want to make a new amendment, Mac?
I'd like to amend to bring the deer panguage to 200 antlers taken off. 200 antlerless deer.
So right now it's at 150.
Yes, up to 200.
Okay.
Yep.
Do we have a second? No second, so the amendment fails. Now we're back to the original motion. And the motion was to accept the antlerless permit recommendations for 2014 as proposed by the division. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
And this would be to Kevin, I guess. Is this emergency plan you've got? You know, I mean, it's easy to see that, you know, there's a lot of heat in this room right now about, you know, what to do with all of these cows. And I think the last thing anybody wants to see is what happened last year. And I think most everybody here knows that and knows what did happen, that we actually had somebody shooting the elk and had that problem. And I can see from the emotion here that, you know, this is real, and I think that we could end up in that situation again if we don't act in some way to take care of this problem. So I guess my question is, on your emergency plan, how long does it take to enact, and would the ranchers be satisfied to handle this excess that they're seeing through that procedure? I don't know what it requires to have the emergency hunt, but we're just way too radical on these number of tags to be increasing without anything, you know, coming from the department on whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. But there's definitely enough heat in the air to know that something, we need to do something, we need to come up with something so everybody can go out of here and we can work it out and make them happy and not end up with the kind of situation we had last year.
You know, you ask a question that's really impossible to answer. You know, you ask if they would be satisfied, and that's really a question of trust. And right now there probably isn't enough trust. You know, and that's where I come back to the comment that I made to what Max said earlier, that somehow we need to figure out how to make the relationship between the agricultural community and the sportsman more of a partnership than it is now. And I wish I had a silver bullet on how to do that. I don't. But it's something that that everybody needs to work on, because there's a lot of common interest between those two groups, and we end up focusing on the few things that we disagree on, when there's a lot to be gained by working together. I can tell you the division's committed to, if we need to do, you know, take an emergency action in July, we'll do it. Whether that will satisfy the people that are here in the room, I guess honestly I doubt it. But maybe if we need to follow through on that, if it deteriorates and we do it, maybe that'll increase the trust, and next time it'll be more satisfactory. So it's a balancing act. And maybe the right thing is to do, you know, some now and some then. I don't know. You know, to try to get to what you were talking about, Sam.
Part of Sam's question was on the process. If one of these gentlemen came in to your office tomorrow and said, "I got X amount of elk on me in excess of what you guys think is there," how's that process work? What does it take to go from that to possibly one of these emergency hunts? So I guess what I'm asking is, how are they pacified in knowing that that's going to be taken seriously, and that somebody's going to come out and there's going to be a group, they're going to look at that? How do you get from A to the end product?
I guess we have the luxury to be a little more flexible than, you know, these guys are being told they need to cut now in anticipation of what may come.
our approach is more let's see how it develops, and then if we need to make cuts, we will. You know, if we get good monsoon moisture like we did last year, you know, this situation becomes a lot less heated than it is right now, and there's no way to tell whether that's going to happen. So that, as we discussed this, that the approach we decided to take is let's make aggressive, you know, and when you look at it, these recommendations are more aggressive than last year as is, but we'll look at how the summer progresses. And if range conditions are deteriorating, and then we'll take further action. That's the commitment I can make. At what form that will come, on what specific units, I can't say right now because it could be different on different in different areas.
I guess for me that's the key. When you said range conditions, if you see them deteriorating, is there a process where that's going to be looked at? Are these folks invited to go out with you? Are you getting with Forest Service and BLM and already planning ahead to start looking at those conditions? I think even though we can't crystal ball that, we could start setting dates to say we're going to go out on this date or this date, invite these folks, get Forest Service and BLM involved. And I think that's what lacks sometimes is that communication. And that would go to what you were saying earlier about getting sportsmen and some of these other folks together, is at least making commitments to go out on the ground and start looking at that.
Sorry to interrupt. May I share some insight on this? In 2011, this is something we had to do in the region in southeast Utah, where drought conditions on that north end of the Manti were really bad, and we recognized it. The Forest Service everybody noted. I mean, it was evident. And what you guys are talking about is exactly what we did. We were in communication very often with the Forest Service, looking at the conditions. We talked to permittees. We spent some time in the field. We even took a GIP representative out there from that represented agricultural interests, and it was hard. It was tough to look at these things and look at the situation and say, yeah, we got to make some cuts. But I think when we did that, we actually built a lot of trust by spending time on the ground looking at the habitat with our sportsmen and our agricultural community, and it can be a fairly quick process. I know that was one of your questions. It's something we were monitoring all spring and into the summer, and when it was time, we knew the permits we were going to recommend. Everyone was comfortable with that, and there was actually a lot of grateful people, especially on the agricultural community side, that was thankful for us taking a hard look at it. So we do have a track record of doing it, and I imagine we'd follow that same template. So.
Okay, thank you. Max?
Yeah, I got a question. When did, it was 2 years ago, we voted to increase the fish lake to 5,600 head. Is that correct?
Is that correct, Teresa?
Pardon
my ignorance.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay. I was one that went up to the Wildlife Board to go against the increase. Okay. Right after during the voter process there, Anise said, well, we already have the elk. And I already brought up two times before that about integrity. Okay, mm-hmm. Now, you guys has got to come to the table about integrity. Where are your numbers? Where are they going? Mm-hmm. All the time they're going that way. And now you still say Fish Lake is at 5,600, and you're over that. You don't count the elk that goes across I-70. You don't do that. And they winter. Some of them winter across I-70.
Sure. But we do fly the Manti. And one thing that we're trying to do, Mac, moving forward, and we started this 2 years ago, is when we fly these populations and survey them, we're not flying the Fish Lake one unit and the Manti the next.
I understand.
We're going to be, and that's one thing that we recognized a few years ago that we need to improve on, and we've taken those steps to do it. So we're classifying and counting all these elk at the same time. So we're not having that ping pong effect to get exactly what you're talking about. So if they were out going on the Manti, they would have been picked up on the, or across to the Manti, they would have been picked up on that survey. I guess what I'm trying to say, Mac, is, like as Kevin reiterated, we are committed to trying to get these elk populations at their objectives. And if conditions warrant, even under objective in some cases, if it's better for the range. And that's something that we're going to have to look at this spring and summer closely with the Forest Service and sportsmen and agriculture. And that's something we're willing to commit to do.
Okay. Now, while I got you there,
sure.
I want you to figure out what the recruitment is on Fish Lake. You say there are 5,600 elk, right? Total.
Yeah, I'd have to look at these.
Okay,
sure.
That's what it says.
Okay.
That's your population in estimate postseason 2013, which is what you're working off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now let's figure what recruitment's coming in. You say there's 50% of them are producing cows?
Generally, if you have 100 cows, your cow-to-calf ratio, you're going to throw 50 calves. Yeah.
Okay. And they only get 50% calf crop? Mm-hmm. You get 50% cows, that's 3,200 cows. 50% calf crop. I'm not talking about bulls, Brian. I'm talking about what's coming in. What's coming in? Close to 1,600 calves coming in next year. Talk about a blue light special. You're going to have it.
Mac, I can take a look at those numbers for you.
Okay. Let's move on.
Thank you.
And if you want to talk with Mac, you guys can get together later. Okay. We have the motion on the floor. It's been okay. Does anybody want to amend that motion further? Okay. Dale?
In the letter from the Fish Lake, I mean, it basically says we recommend the division consider a short-term aggressive antlerless management to help decrease potential impacts to aspen on Monroe Mountain. Well, I mean, that's, in my mind, that's basis for an emergency if they're saying that. So, I mean, I'd like to amend it to do 100 more on Monroe. These guys have come in, several of them from Beaver. They've stated they're basically in an emergency situation. They didn't ask for an increase on Beaver. They just said to move the 145 that you're already doing to that north end on that allotment. So I want to amend the motion to increase Monroe 100 head and to move the 145 on Beaver to that north area that's affecting these guys where that 450 head are hanging at. And then we'll try increasing the Southwest Desert to 450. See if that one will fly.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion to amend and seconded. And the motion reads is to increase the Monroe antlerless deer by 100, or antlerless elk by 100. Increase or move the 145 on the Beaver to the north end, and increase the Southwest Desert to 450. Is that right?
Created a new boundary specifically for that north end this year. So I would guess it would be to Riley, if that was the case, would be to move all 145 into the new boundary at this path.
Right. All that's why we created that new boundary is to shift all of those hunts towards the north end,
stay
away from that south end.
So are currently the 145 you have, are they already all on that north end? Riley, come to the mic.
One 100 of those are all on the north end. Then 45 of them are on the other side in Circleville.
So it'd be moving 45 from the main unit to the north end. So you'd have all 145.
What's the issue you're trying to address in Circleville?
Depredation as well, just trying to keep the pressure on the cows in Circleville to try and stay off of the fields in the winter there. So I guess I wouldn't be completely comfortable with taking the cow tags off of Circleville and move them.
So I'm going to change the motion.
Okay.
So leave the 45 on the Circleville side and do 145 on that north end.
So increase the north end.
45 on that north end.
Increase the north end to 145?
Right.
That's what's already on the way. What is it now?
No.
So it would be 190 tags total, 45 of them in Circleville and 145 of them in the new boundary on the north end.
Correct.
Yes. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
I think Teresa mentioned that you guys have an agreement with the Forest Service that as soon as they start that, you guys were going to increase the tags anyways. Is that, well, you mentioned something about it. I don't know what that agreement is.
So there's been a big, the Monroe Mountain Working Group has been putting together recommendations in anticipation of some aspen regeneration treatments on Monroe Mountain. What we've agreed to in that document as it stands right now is not to do preemptive hunts, but once a treatment has been accomplished, to do some very specific and localized reductions after treatment's taken place. And the reason that we felt pretty adamant that that's the right approach is most of this will be done with controlled burns. Controlled burns have a very tight window, and sometimes you can have one planned and it's 5 years later before it actually takes place. And so we didn't want to reduce elk numbers prior to, because we don't know when it's actually going to happen, but we're fully committed to doing it as soon as a project takes place to do, and it may be some very small localized hunts. We're going to have to get creative how we do it, but that's what we've committed to at this point. And again, we've committed to make that recommendation. That'll have to go through the RAC and the board process to approve it, but we've committed to make those recommendations, and I think we'd get support, given what's trying to be accomplished there.
Okay, any further discussion by the RAC?
For the Forest Service rep, in regards to the letter, did the Forest Service actually have a number they were talking about in terms of that reduction? I was wondering what aggressive meant. And be aggressive when you come up.
I'm Jason Clam, the district ranger in Richfield. No, we don't have a specific number in mind. We've always counted on our partnerships and our working relationships with the state folks to help us determine what that number should be. We were just requesting and asking that the aspen concerns that we have on Monroe Mountain be considered prior to making that final recommendation to the Wildlife Board.
Okay. Now the amendment as reads, 100, increase 100 elk, in additional elk on their antlerless elk on the Monroe, move the one or increase the beaver north end from 100 to 145, and the southwest desert increase to 450. Is that right? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, personal privilege?
Yes.
You also need to include in that the harvest rate. All of these aren't harvested.
They're talking about tags. Right?
Yeah. You're talking about tags, clarification? Right. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, raise your hand. Got three, four. All opposed, raise your hands.
Three, four, six.
5-6. Motion fails, or amendment fails. And now we're back to the main motion to accept another amendment, if somebody wants to make one. Seeing none, we will vote on the main motion to accept the division's recommendations on antlerless permit. All in favor, raise your hand. 6-4. Any opposed? 2-3-4. Okay, 4. Motion passes. Okay, the next agenda item is antlerless CWMU vouchers and permits. And that will be presented to us by Scott McFarland. Yeah. You want to take a break, everybody? Or you just want to plow through? Let's plow through it. Okay.
I'm going to drive. Might need a break to get this set up anyway. Okay, we're ready to proceed. Would everybody sit down or please take conversations out in the hall? Did we get order? Whoa. Okay, our next agenda item is the antlerless CWMU voucher permit recommendations to be presented by Scott McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you said, I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the division. And this evening I'll be presenting the 2014 CWMU antlerless voucher permit review and the recommendations for this year. Just as an overview, for 2014, we have 42 of the CWMUs were already previously approved. Our CWMUs are on three-year management plans, so those numbers are approved for that three-year period unless the changes are made. And we allow CWMUs to make changes annually in response to changing populations, and that change can be initiated by the division or the CWMU. So nine of the CWMUs requested changes to previously approved numbers, and then nine CWMUs require Wildlife Board approval for new three-year CORs. The nine are ones that were approved last fall, but the antlerless numbers need to be approved for this spring. In summary, the CWMUs in total are requesting 312 private vouchers and 1,224 permits. We're for a total of 1,536 antlerless permits in the CWMU program. Just kind of as a review, there's a little bit of confusion on this sometimes. The way the antlerless vouchers or permits are allocated to the CWMUs starts with the buck and bull process, and they choose a depending on what the buck and bull allocation is, it matters what the antlerless CWMU ratio is. For example, if the CWMU chooses a 90-10 split on deer or elk, most of the CWMU permits, antlerless permits, are going to come as elk permits. There's very few deer permits. If they choose a 90-10 split, 90% of the buck permits or bull permits going to the CWMU and 10% going to the public, 100% of the allocated CWMU antlerless permits go to the public through the public draw. And then correspondingly, if they take an 85-15 split, they have a 25-75 split and so on down. So it doesn't, just because they take a 90-10 split doesn't mean that the public just gets 10% of the antlerless permits also. Just wanted to clarify that. Okay, I'll go quickly through the recommendations by region. I won't go through these individually, but this is the recommendations for the northern region. We had quite a few renewals, and one CWMU requested a change for a reduction of elk antlerless and doe pronghorn permits. We recommend approval of all those. That would be the Grass Valley, Clark Canyon, Grouse Creek, Hardscrabble, Jacobs Creek, Mountaintop, Woodruff Creek, and Deseret CWMUs. For the southeast region, most of these were change requests. Two of them renewal, with Minimod Ridge and Red Ranches were renewed, and I believe they kept the same number of permits. Emma Park, Prestonetta Ranch, Conover Jensen, Spring Creek Dodge, and Summit Point CWMUs requested change, and most of those were asking for a reduction in antlerless elk permits. For the southern region, for this region here, we had one renewal, the Black Point. It was a pronghorn CWMU, and they're requesting two private and three public pronghorn antlerless permits. And we recommend approval of that. And Alton asked for an increase in antlerless elk permits, and their corresponding ratio would make three private and seven public permits. We recommend approval of that. For the central region, the Houston and 3C CWMUs requested a change. Both of those are asking for a slight reduction in antlerless elk permits, and we recommend approval of both those also. So as a summary for 2014, this is how it comes out. The deer, there's 10 two-doe permits that are being requested in one of the CWMUs in Box Elder County, and that is to deal with agricultural damage. On the elk, we'd have 238 private permits and 1,090 public permits. In pronghorn, we'd have 74 private permits and 124 public permits, for a total of 312 private antlerless permits and 1,224 public antlerless permits. And what I've done, in the handout, it describes all of the antlerless permits. The handout was provided at the back here, and to the RAC committee describes all those. And that's all I have for this CWMU antlerless. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go ahead and take questions from the public. Seeing none, do we have any questions from the RAC? Okay, seeing none there, we have public comment. Wade Heaton, are you still here? Okay.
Wade had to leave, and he asked me if I would speak for him. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. The Alton Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit would like to concur with the division's recommendations. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any discussion from the board or from the RAC? Not, we will entertain a motion. Okay, there's been a motion that we accept the recommendations.
I make a motion with this microphone that we accept that as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded that we accept the amendment as presented by the division. Discussion? Okay, all in favor, raise your hand. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, the last business that we have is on wild horses. And this is a item that the Iron County Commissioners asked me to present to the RAC for consideration. And let me read real quick. The western and eastern Utah County contains 22 herd management areas, two of which have burrows. Each herd management area is managed through the wild horse management plans prepared by the BLM through the NEPA process. The wild horse management plans established appropriate management levels of wild horses in each area based on multiple use factors, which takes into account the needs of wild horses, wildlife, and domestic livestock as they relate to arid ecosystems in Utah. The intent of the management plan is to establish AML in each herd management unit. The management and manage wild horse numbers at the level that will maintain the range in the condition that will sustain the usage by various resources and not cause harm or degradation to the fragile arid ecosystem. In September 2013, letters were sent to livestock permittees in Iron County and Beaver. The BLM indicated that they will not have the resources to gather wild horses in the herd management areas and will not be able to maintain the wild horses at appropriate management levels as indicated in the planning documents. They have asked the number of livestock permittees to voluntarily reduce their livestock AUMs by as much as 50% to compensate for the inability to keep wild horses at appropriate management levels and prevent range degradation due to the excessive numbers of wild horses. What does this mean for wildlife? Wildlife share the same habitat as wild horses and depend on the same water sources to survive in the arid desert areas. Wild horses are known to dominate water sources, especially during drought conditions, and prevent or curtail wildlife from watering. Excessive wild horse numbers also consume forage available and cause deterioration of range conditions if left unchecked. The negative impacts on the range will be magnified as the whole state is in a drought condition. Some of the wild horse areas contain premium elk and deer areas that have been managed as such for years, and the hunters wait over 15 years to hunt. It is hard to believe these areas will become dust bowls from the overabundance of wild horses, and years of careful planning and management will be set back. Many of the local economies depend on big game seasons that will surely feel the impact of reducing hunting for years to come. What can the RAC and the State Wildlife Board do? The RACs and the State Wildlife Board can recommend to the state to become proactive in telling the BLM to manage the wild horses in appropriate management levels. The state should insist on being a full partner in developing action plans to bring the horses in the herd management areas under appropriate management levels that have been established in the horse management plans. And with that, any discussion? I guess public comment first, or public questions.
I had to go outside and cool off for just a minute, but Chris Halterman with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. I just have a statement to read concerning what Mike had just read. If I may, I'd like to just read this statement. I didn't bring my glasses, so I got to hold it out a little bit. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation appreciates the opportunity to comment before you today. The feral horses and burros found on western landscapes today are not native wildlife and are significantly overpopulated on our western public rangelands. Research in the Great Basin has shown the feral horses have impacted native plant communities. The grass and shrub components have been reduced, affecting forage quantity for native plant cover needed for ground nesting birds. This can lead to more invasive plant species such as cheatgrass, where feral horses roam. Riparian and wetland areas have also been impacted by feral horses through soil compaction and increased erosion. Depending upon seasonal timing, intensity, and duration of use, water is scarce in many western landscapes occupied by feral horses, and these same horses tend to protect water sources from wildlife use, particularly elk, deer, pronghorn, and bighorn sheep, forcing them to other areas which may be less suitable habitat. Horses tend to use higher elevations and steeper slopes than cattle, which cause direct conflict with elk, deer, bighorn sheep, use of critical winter ranges. Horses tend to clip the vegetation closer to the ground, which may affect the plant growth for the remaining growth cycle or for future growth years. It is unfortunate that Congress has passed specific legislation protecting non-native horses, further complicating management of ranged resources, while the conservation of native plants and animals and ecosystem may not be given the same attention or budget considerations. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has always supported scientific management of wildlife and habitat. Additionally, we have granted millions of dollars to federal and state agencies to battle invasive non-native plants that compromise native ecosystems. We encourage the BLM to use every available tool, including sterilization and euthanization, to reduce the feral horse and burro numbers down to the 26,677 population objective and maintain that population at that level. I've also got a national coalition that has been started, and I actually brought copies for all of you, if I may hand those out. So, anyway, this as you look through these and read these, this is a coalition that was actually put together. And one of the things that we need to remember as between agricultural people and wildlife organizations, we might differ in some things, but there's some things that we need to come together on and battle together. This is a coalition that has actually been organized. If you look at the bottom, the organizations that have approved this, the American Farm Bureau Federation, Masters of Foxhounds Association, Mule Deer Foundation, National Rifle Association, National Association of Conservation Districts, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, National Wildlife Refuge Association, and Public Lands Council, Public Lands Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Safari Club International, and Society for Range Management, and the Wildlife Society. I would just like to encourage this board, and I appreciate their time and their effort away from their families to be here, but that we need to better educate ourselves on this, and we need to come together to increase the pressure with the BLM. And I agree with the chairman and his recommendation that we need to do that as a RAC. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public?
John Keeler, Utah Farm Bureau. It was mentioned the American Farm Bureau was on that letter, but the Utah Farm Bureau does support that position. This is a severe, severe problem that needs great attention.
Thank you. Don?
Naughty Hunter.
sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, we concur with all of that, and we'll send a letter on to those people, sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife for Utah, about those horses. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comments? Lee?
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. Having a wild horse ruin one of my antelope hunts, United Wildlife Cooperative also agrees with this proposal.
Okay. Go ahead.
Brayden Richmond, representing the Beaver SFW chapter. This may be the first time ever I'm going to agree with this guy. We should celebrate that all by itself. I just want to make the comment, we also agree with this. These wild horses are a plague, and they're way overnumbered. I mean, we want to talk about population objectives and all this with what we can manage, and yet we're these wild horses, we all understand, are out of our management control. What we'd like to really see is this is an opportunity for sportsmen, cattlemen, and the division to come together and support a common thing that would help, I hope, would bridge some of that gap, and we can actually have something that we agree on to work together on for a change. It'd be real positive if we could have the division actually say, support this.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the public? Yes.
I enjoy those horses. I see them every day. But they're not where they're supposed to be. They're on an allotment that a man had for a certain number of cattle for about 5 months of grazing. Now there's more horses than what his cattle allotment was, and they're there 12 months out of the year and increasing all the time. I know that when we had drought here a few years ago, those horses were ranging 20 miles from the water hole to find feed. And that's cutting a big swath of land where they're eating everything that was available. They've got to get a hold of this, and the program that they have just is not working. If the horses were turned back to the state could put charge license fees. Cowboys would go out there to chase the horses. The mechanics would make a lot of money off from fixing the trucks. The hospitals would make a lot of money out of patching up the cowboys, and the vets would make a lot of money out of patching up their saddle horses. And it'd really be an economic boom for this area if we could just wrestle that control from the federal government, who makes these horse decisions 2,000 miles from where the horses are.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the public? Questions or comments from the RAC? Yes.
Is this an item that as a RAC we can recommend to be put on as an action item to go to the Wildlife Board?
Yeah, knowing that this was going to come up, I talked to the director's office and to Marty, and to the extent that wild horses have an impact on wildlife, and the RACs and the board have authority over wildlife, we think it's appropriate if the RAC chooses to endorse this proposed action or do something else, and so I think it's appropriate if you wanted to make some sort of a motion to endorse, what's been said here tonight and pass that on to the board.
I'd like to make a motion that we support and endorse the topics that have been talked tonight about the wild horses and burros, and I'd like to see that as an action item on the next Wildlife Board meeting.
Okay. Seconded by Mac. Discussion? Okay, all in favor, raise your hand. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Do we have any other items of business to take care of before we adjourn? Motion has been made. We adjourn. Any second? Seconded by Harry. Motion.